Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise that our quite something able. We're off the bag in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He, he says the turbo. All worth looking to says the turbo and the knights of the round table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop.
Always looking to serve the turtle and the Knights of the Round Table. ladies and gentlemen, hang on to your hats. This might be a bumpy ride. Woohoo! I like bumpy rides. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www. Was that three W's or was that four W's? Three W's. nonetheless, go to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html where you have access to not one, but four separate chat rooms. And it gets better than that. For a low, low price of $0.00 plus tax. Uh-oh, not tax. Anyway, scroll down underneath the chat rooms and click on the People for People radio link and go over there and visit them as well. Go say hi to the TCT group. And looks like Buzz put some poetry into the chat room. We might have to get around to reading that too. Anyway, we ain't got time for that for the moment though, because I say let us all go to war. Yeah, let's do that. Let everybody on this planet, we'll give you like 48 hours to gear up and get ready. Let's go to war. Let's find some creative ways to hurt one another. Let's find some ways to brutalize our neighbors and burn down their houses and run over their crops. Let's do something really rotten to each other on a daily basis from here on out. Yeah, it's time to go to war. It's time to go out there and find those people out there that are trying to build their nations up, and let's tear them nations down. Alright? Let's tear our nation down. Heck, when you go somewhere in public today, do something rude. Get violent, hurt one another, and if possible, steal something. You know? Let's go out and steal and lie and cheat and do all kinds of rotten stuff. That's the thing we need to do, because, you know, war is profitable, all right? Somebody going to get rich when we go to war. Let's take all our children and get them trained up to, you know, not like people because of what they look like, or maybe because of whatever side of the fence they might be on. You know, that whole right wing, left wing of the eagle thing? Well, both of those wings are connected to the same bird, I guess. But that's all right. We could use that. That's a tool, all right? And there's some folks out there that got a lot of money, and we can get them to help us destabilize our own nations and, you know, do some really rotten things around the globe. I think it's time we tear it all down. Let's do something really rotten every chance we get. If you can steal it from somebody. Why pay for it? Ain't no need for all that. I mean, violence is where it's at now. Let's get a little bit rowdy. Let's jump over our neighbor's fence and shove over their barbecue and burn down their yard. Heck, man, I think we ought to crash our cars into one another, and just if your language is choice, then maybe you ought to use the best of all what you got and just let it loose, man. Let it all hang out. Blow off some steam. Go out there and get violent. And don't just protest. Break some windows. Tear some things up. You know, turn some cars over. Especially if you win the ball game. That's what you need to do after a ball game, is make sure you burn down your own community. Rob, rape, loot, pillage. Do everything that you can possibly do just to get rowdy. We're talking Operation Chaos here, ladies and gentlemen. We want this world to be so chaotic that, you know, you can't go down the road without somebody looking at you cross-eyed and thinking you might be up to no good. Because we're all going to be up to no good. So, you don't even want to have to think that anymore. They're going to know you're up to no good. Because you're human. You should be up to no good. You should be out there doing something rotten. I mean, terrible. When you see your neighbor growing some beautiful flowers over next door, go get a bucket of paint and slop it all in there, you know. Make it look really, really nasty looking. Alright, do something rude. Mow your neighbor's yard for him. You know? Yeah, mow over his flowers and his garden and his shrubs and, you know, just do everything you can to just try to be as rotten as possible. That's what we need to be doing. We all need to go to war. We need to find those people that look different than us. And we need to find out what they got that we don't have, that maybe we want, that we're going to take by extreme force. And we need to dress our lawmen up in uniforms and make them look like they're getting ready to go to war as well. We need to dress each other up. Dress our children up in uniforms. Get them all ready. This is going to be it, man. This is the last war. This is the war to end all wars. We're going to break loose with violence of epic proportions. We're going to burn down each other's house. We're going to pollute up the land. And we're going to do everything that we can to work against nature. And we're going to see who comes out on top. The last man stands it all. Stands to own it all. All right. There's a song by Metallica called King Nothing. Once you tear it all down, you're the king, all right. You're the last one around. But what you the king of? You're the king of the dump. Alright, well, I don't know too many people who wants to be king of the dump, but that's where we're heading probably. I mean, if we keep on the road that we're on right now, maybe we should just go to war. Maybe we should just get it all over with. You know, it's like that when you gotta rip the band-aid off, why sit there and try to do it slowly, you know, where it's gonna take longer and, you know, hurt for longer? Just run up there and yank that puppy off. And if you get duct tape stuck in your hair, just have your brother or sister just grab a hold of it and take off running. That's common sense. We could do that. All right? Slam each other's fingers in the door. Shove each other down the stairs and over the windows and all anything you can do that just doesn't seem to make any sense. Let's get ridiculous. Hey, and while you're at it, YouTube it. Make some money off of it. See, the mainstream media out there, they kind of like that kind of stuff. Anything that's controversial. And so that's news, you know. But if every single day we're all being violent to one another and talking about war and, you know, I don't like you because you look different. You know, I don't like you because of what you believe in. So, you know, once it all becomes just the norm, it's no longer interesting anymore. So maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we just need to find that nuclear red button and have everybody push them at the same time. Have a going out of business sale for the aliens when they come rolling up on us wanting to capture this planet. When they get down here and they see Americans and people around the world acting all crazy, they're like, man, I don't want to go down there. These people are nuts. Maybe that's why they didn't show up to begin with. You ever think about that? It's a good possibility. Because why would you want to go somewhere where people were constantly polluting their own land that they got to live on and treating their neighbors poorly, running around doing all kinds of rotten things to each other? Hey, and if I don't like you, I got some thugs over there in uniforms that I could call, and they'll come over there and they'll brutalize you for me. All right, and then they'll come brutalize me for calling them because they didn't want to get out of bed to begin with. Or maybe they's hanging out at the donut shop and need some nutrients in, you know, to get that spare tire a little bit, you know, firmer, that kind of stuff. Now, I know what I'm saying sounds kind of ludicrous, but wait a second. Aren't we already doing that? Aren't we already treating each other poorly on a regular basis? Now, if you look out there on YouTube or anywhere on the internet, you'll find groups and organizations that's out there that says fix the world. I posted a couple videos in there. Just, you know, didn't really look at a whole lot of the video. Kind of scanned through a little bit. And I listened to some of the things they were saying, you know, about racism and the way that the money system does and all this kind of stuff. You know, there ain't no justification for why mankind has to treat each other poorly. We're capable of so much more than you can possibly imagine. The wonders that we could actually accomplish if we ever decided to work together, then this would be heaven on earth. This could quite literally turn into a utopia. You know, but for some reason, if you look back through history, wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famines and pestilence and all that kind of stuff, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, when Revelations comes about, the world's going to get rough. Well, hold on a second. Let me ask you a question. If you're standing there and this guy over there looks kind of guilty and somebody with a drone, you know, he's behind the camera, he sees this one that looks guilty and he sees you standing there, he looks at the other guy, what do I do here? And he pushes the button. All right, there's this thing they call double tapping where they actually will hit it twice, the same spot. And so when people see somebody get hurt, well, they'll rush in to save them. and see if they can save them, if they can find any of the pieces or whatever, put them back together like Humpty Dumpty. But nonetheless, the innocents come running in to try to save somebody they thought was innocent, or maybe somebody that really was innocent, and they get blowed up too. But that's part of the deal there, you know. It's called collateral damage. It's okay, you know. We got the bad guy. Sorry about your luck on the other side, you know, and whatever. But it didn't stop there. There were people brutalizing people so far back in history and continued to brutalize people because they didn't agree with them and such. And even in the modern day, it still happens. People don't want you to be a certain faith, or they don't want you to be a certain political group or whatever, or if they just don't like the fact that you can say what you want or dress like you want or whatever like that, you know, they find all kinds of excuses to basically, you know, do something rotten. So I think maybe we should just pit one another against one another. I think we maybe should just pull up arms against each other and just get it over with. You know, World War I, World War II, well, let's go back even further than that. Let's go to, like, Revolutionary War, Civil War, Vietnam, Korea, all these different conflicts that you can list out through history. And let's take all that knowledge that we learned on how to hurt one another and see if we can amplify it with our newest technology, our latest weapons of doom. I think maybe we should just, like, get it over with really fast, rip the Band-Aid off quickly. Because this slow torture of one another has been going on so long, if you actually calculate up the numbers of lives lost in conflicts throughout the entirety of the history of mankind, it's ridiculous. And they say the world's overpopulated. How could we ever even get overpopulated when we're too busy whacking one another? I mean, for Pete's sake, folks, you know, it's not the average Joe out there that wants to kill their brothers and sisters around the globe. There's a group of evil individuals out there. You can call them a secret society if you like. It's not such a secret because, I mean, you know, the guys that's up there at the top that control all the finances, that lobby senates and Congress and parliaments and all this kind of stuff, that basically use their medias to propagandize the individuals of the world to get them riled up, man. We got to get our civilians mad so they'll join the military. So they'll run out there and take arms up against these people. All right, and then we can get their oil cheaper. Or maybe they don't want our money anymore. Maybe they want gold instead of whatever for their product. Well, we can't have that because we can't have other nations being as powerful as us. So we got to go to war with them. And in order to go to war with them, we got to do something rotten to our own people in order to get them upset so they'll be willing to go to war. And we can tug on their heartstrings. We can rough up a few kids if necessary to get our point across. Does anybody besides me see the ludicrousness of all of this entire scenario? It drives me bonkers to know that throughout the history of time, thousands, millions of people are being killed in this world. Think about it. Now, if the news told me that there were millions of people killed around the world, and I really ain't got no way to verify that, but this is what they're telling me, so now in my mindset, this is a tragedy, because if you lose one person, as far as I'm concerned, it's a tragedy. It's a waste of humanity, because that one person could have been that missing piece of the puzzle that could have resolved one of these issues that, you know, could have been something beneficial for all of humanity, you know, cured some sort of disease, found the missing piece of the puzzle to find a way to grow things better or whatever, you know. Or there's so many different potential directions that you could go with somebody who could have done something positive in this world that is no longer with us because somebody figured collateral damage was all right. Now, I may sound crazy, and I probably am, because, you know, and I'd be justified for being so, because I've went down the rabbit hole so deep that I've actually seen and heard things that no man or woman should ever have to see or hear. I mean, this is, you're born into this world bright-eyed and you know, curious about the world, and then you find out a day at a time, or, you know, minute by minute, that the world isn't exactly the safest place, and so you need to figure out a way to, you know, hang close to mom or hang close to big brother. You can't go down the street without somebody wanting to bully you or beat you up or steal from you or whatever. And if you look slightly funny, then you might get a little bit of hassle out of that as well. Might get a lot. Might actually get brutalized for it. It might affect you the rest of your entire life. You may just as well end up being the bully before it's all said and done. But that's life, right? But does it have to be? That's the question I'm trying to really ask here today. I say, you know, let us all go to war. Alright? Let's get it over with. Let's throw down. Everybody put on their brass knuckles, get out your chains and your knives and all that stuff, and let's just get it on. Let's throw down and let's get it over with, because, you know, it's kind of like whenever you're young and you get in trouble with your parents, and you know dad's coming home, and you know that you done did something wrong, and you got to wait and find out, you know? And, boy, you spend all that time thinking about what dad's going to do to you. And then when you get home, may or may not be bad or worse. but it's also the same concept of that bully that comes up, and he's getting ready to swing on you, and he flinches, and you keep ducking, and he's just tormenting the heck out of you. And then maybe he does or doesn't hit you. Maybe he just laughs at you because he's swinging his fist at you. Well, that's what I feel like. I feel like the world is doing the same thing to me. I feel like I'm waiting for the axe to drop. I'm waiting for that fist to fly. I'm waiting for them to come and get me. I'm waiting for them to lock me up because I'm nuts. All right? Well, maybe we should just get it over with. If the world's going to be bad, we might as well make it real bad. Let's do a good job of it. Let's just tear it all up. Let's destroy everything in our path. And then when it's all said and done for all of us survivors, whoever's left over after the, man-made apocalypse, we could, kind of sweep up around things. And maybe then, after everything has been destroyed and we are at the mercy of whatever's left over to survive, maybe then we can exercise one little thing that we had ignored all along. And that's common sense. Common sense dictates if you slam your finger in the refrigerator door, it's going to hurt. And the second time you do, it's probably going to hurt then too. After a while, it might just get numb, or maybe you'll just whack it off and that's that, but whatever. You stick your finger in the fire, you're going to get burnt. So on down the line, you all know the cliches. Let's just try to learn from something that happened in the past. And not try to repeat it. There's all kinds of people out there wanting to make this world a better place. And they're trying. Maybe the only thing they have is to show a video of things in the past. Or maybe they only have their words. Or maybe they're trying to inspire those in power to finally make the right choices. The ultimate responsibility, unfortunately, lies on each and every one of us. You can treat your children poorly, and they can treat their children poorly, and they most likely will. You can teach the children in school that we are different in color. You can teach them that we are different in political or faith, or you can teach them that we are all the same and that we are all designed to work together so that when we work together, we get things done. And it doesn't have to be by force. You don't have to put in place some government that's going to force you to be like this. The only possibility for this to ever even succeed is if you decide to choose to use your free will and to use every bit of your talents and gifts to benefit not just yourself but everyone else around the planet. Now, that's a novel concept. And the probability, according to everything that I've heard and people that like to preach and prophesy doom and gloom, they don't see it like I see it. They don't believe that there's a possibility that you can get 9 billion people on this planet to realize that killing each other is not the way to go. And that peace had never come from the end of the barrel of a gun. And it has been said that if you live by the sword, you shall surely die by the sword. If you think about that, and you think about, you know, other cultures that say, you know, karma, what comes around goes around, it's coming back to us. I can't remember who it was, but somebody likes to use that phrase, the chicken's coming home to roost. Yeah, well, as funny as that may sound, it's really not that funny. Because everything that we've done is going to come back. You know, all these things that we've done to nature and our environment, it's going to come back. Some believe it's already came back. Some believe that there's no way that we can fix it and that we're all going to die, we're doomed, and everything is negative and woe is me, the world's terrible. And so I'm saying, okay, we got to humor these folks too. Let's just get it on. I'm serious. Let's get it on. Everybody go out there to your local weapons shop and stock up. Get you some blackjack, some brass knuckles, some bullwhips, chains, doggone it, improvise. Be creative. I mean, we're going to have a party after all. We're going to brutalize our families and our neighbors and our nations and just, you know, tear it all down. When the smoke clears, whoever's left standing, well, that's the man. That's the one you follow. He's the toughest one, and that's the guy, no matter what his political ideology or rules is, if he's the one standing, then he's in charge. Kind of reminds me of the Road Warrior movies, you know, I hate it when I see videos like that, especially if you ever humor me and go out and watch that video called the Jericho series, watch it start to finish, and you see how their version of justice was, and how I don't believe anybody has the right to do what these people done to each other. I don't believe the world has the right to go to war with one another. But they do. And they have been. For years. There's got to come a time when enough's enough. There's got to come a time when the army man says, look, this is ridiculous, and lays down the arms. Everybody's talking about gun control. the system don't want gun control. They don't want gun control because it's like Nicolas Cage in The Art of War. As long as y'all fighting and killing each other, they're making money. As long as y'all are looking at each other like you're different because of the color of your skin or your political views or whatever, they don't care. They're making money. Advertisers are on CNN. Advertisers are on MSNBC and ABC and Fox News Network and all the other affiliates of those corporations. And they make money. So while you're out there protesting, they might be watching in to see what you're doing because they want to see the Jerry Springer show. Well, you know, when it's time, the advertisers kick on there. They sell you products that you probably in the crowd while you're protesting drinking one of their sodas. You're probably out there wearing one of their shirts. Yeah, and you spend a lot of money for that. But then that shirt's going to get tore while you're in the midst of that riot or pepper sprayed or, you know, damaged or soiled with blood or whatever. And then you're going to go out and you're going to buy another one from them. The same people. The same people who made their money off the backs and the blood, sweat, and tears of all the we the peoples of the world. And they're going to sell you more. And you're going to buy it. They're going to tell you on the TV that if you don't have this, you're not cool. If you don't look like this, you're ugly. And if you're too fat, don't come over here. Because this is for the pretty people. That's what they're going to tell you. And you're going to buy it. It's time, folks. It's time for you to reach down inside and turn that light on. And it's time for you to show the world what common sense really looks like. Or we could just go to war. Hi, Barbara.
Hey there. Well, good morning, Hiyaniwash Day, to everyone here. We're talking to you from Turtle Island. Talking to the world, you know. Wow. I'm looking at some stuff here that, you know, I find it interesting that, I guess in our the common way that we are brought up and the way our history is and, you know, is limited, but also the way we're brought up, I guess it's sort of like we've come to accept that just war is a normal thing in our lives, but, you know, it's not really, I guess it shouldn't be normal, but listen, you know, we've been at war for since 1776. Now this is just here, 214 years of American war making. Okay, so nobody thinks about that. it's just something because, you know, you have generations that have gone to war, and then everybody forgets it for a while, and of course, you know, you look back in your history, well, my great-great-great-grandpa was in this war, or so on and so forth, and it gets just part of your history. It's part of your family. It's part of your family history. It's part of the nation's history. But think about this. What about the Crusades? What about those wars? I mean, we're talking wars way, way back. And I'm just looking at this one site about we're at war and we have been since 1776, 214 years of American war making. And this is an interesting quote from President Theodore Roosevelt, who says, "I should welcome almost any war, for I think this country needs war." Yeah, why? I don't know why. Why do we need war? Tell us, President, why? I mean, what kind of a statement is that?
Well, yeah, well, coming from a leader?
Yes. You know, it's like it's the... You have the issue now where we are today, you know, with the supreme Islamophobic crime, you know, the myth of things. But I guess this is an interesting link because it says the mother of all myths is that the United States has been waging wars of aggression, not Iran. Iran hasn't been waging wars of aggression. The United States has been, right? So you have this map here, countries, United States and Israel have either bombed, which are in red, or have military bases, which are in blue. Oh, it's really quite extraordinary. But you have, pick any year since 1776, and there is about 91% chance that America was involved in some war, you know, during that calendar year. The United States has never gone a decade without war. Yeah, and the only time the U.S. went 5 years, only 5 years without war, was 1935 and 1940 because they call it an isolationist period, which was the Great Depression. You know, so everybody's down and out, and it was like practically, you know, they were jumping out of windows and jumping off of cliffs. And
oh, yeah.
But you have, here's my thing. And this person says the same thing. Now, I'm always saying this country, the United States of America, was founded on manifest destiny, on war, genocide, and on, right? We have that as a fact. And here this person says the U.S. was born out of ethnic cleansing, a violent process that had started long before 1776, because we're all, well, this is when the United States began, 1776, right, you know, and would not be complete until 1900. More than half of America's existence, 53%, has been marked by the active process of ethnic cleansing of the indigenous population, which was ultimately all but destroyed, you know. Now you have the Armenian genocides, the Islamophobes, you have all this stuff, but the great... By looking in America's many wars throughout history, it becomes apparent that it is not radical Islam that propels the country to war? And was it the Koreans over there? How threatening were they? The Korean War, World War One, World War Two. You know, you have all these things going on that we are involved in other parts of the world, and I think more and more we're getting, you know, an understanding that there's we're being led constantly into war. Our children are being constantly taken to fight on other lands, you know. So you have cold wars. That's the other thing. What's a cold war, you know? So, it's the objects of American aggression have certainly changed with time, but the primary motivating factor behind U.S. wars of aggression have always been the same: expansion of U.S. hegemony. Right? So you have. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm just
now,
absorbing everything.
On this year-by-year timeline of America's major wars from 1776 to, this is only up to 2011, we're still in a 15-year war with Afghanistan, and you know, there are wars going on over there. We were involved in Syria over there long before the public knew. Clandestine, things were going on there in Syria that nobody knew. So our soldiers have been over there. But you have the American Revolutionary War, the Chickamauga Wars, the Panamite-Yankee War. This goes on and on and on all the way from, you know, 1776, all the way continued to 1794. Then you have the Northwest Indian War, 1795.
Yeah.
Then you have the Quasi War. What's a Quasi War?
I don't know. But you know, the scary thing about it is, we're just naming off the ones that's going on here in America. We haven't even got around to all the different countries out there that are fighting with their own neighbors and such. You know, and even in North Korea and South Korea, this has been a conflict that's been going on since the Korean War. It's still, you know, they still got a border there. They don't like each other, you know, and the ones that probably do like each other maybe have relatives on the other side of the fence. It'd be kind of like that Europe deal where they tore down the wall. Remember that deal?
I do. So,
yeah.
And you're right, because we're only talking about what our country's been involved in with its inhabitants here. And then you have the border wars, you have the wars with the Mexicans and the wars with the Spanish, and so, thinking on this, every country has its own internal wars, right, against its people.
Yep.
And you have this, I didn't know this. Did you know that in 1819 there was a Yellowstone Expedition anti-piracy war?
It don't surprise me, no. Because to this very day, there are literal pirates. They actually attack ships.
Yeah, you know? But this is in Yellowstone.
Well, don't, like I said, it don't surprise me none.
You have the Cherokee Indian War, the Seminole Wars, the Buckshot War, the Heatherly Indian War. Who comes up with all these names, right? You have the U.S. forces clash with the Chinese in 1843. U.S. troops invade African coasts. Why?
The thing is, there's so many of these doggone wars. Who can keep up with all the names? That there's wars we probably don't even know about probably going on right now.
Well, that's what this writer says. He says these are the only wars that he knows of. But why in 1843 did the United States troops invade African coasts?
I have no idea.
Then you have the Texas Indian Wars. Right?
Yeah.
The Texas Indian Wars and the Cayuse Wars, the Southwest Indian Wars, the Navajo Wars, the Apache Wars, the California Indian Wars, the skirmish between the 1st Cavalry and the Indians. You have the Puget Sound War, they have the Klickitat War, you have the Rogue River War, you have the U.S. forces invade Fiji Island in Uruguay. Why? In 1855. What were we doing there?
I had no idea.
Then you have conflict in Nicaragua. Yes.
But I do have a guess. I do have a guess why we were in all these places. They had something to offer that we wanted that they weren't willing to give.
Well, or that, or maybe they were just different people.
Yeah, they looked funny. That's it.
They looked kind of funny. They were doing weirdo. They were doing weirdo things. They were all dancing around a fire, and that's scary.
They looked like they were too happy, so they might have been on the peace pipe or something. Oh,
my. I can go on here. There's like conflict in Mexico in 1875, Texas Indian Wars, Comanche Wars, Eastern Nevada, Mason County War, Colfax County War, and U.S. forces invaded Mexico in 1875. What? Yeah, we know that, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have the Bannock War, the Cheyenne War, the Lincoln County War.
Here's some wars that maybe people don't realize that were going on in history between, not militaries, but between civilians, union organizations, and non-union organizations. They actually went to war with one another in the streets.
Well, then you have the Philippine-American War.
Yeah,
They were called the Banana Wars. Banana Wars. From 1899, Banana Wars, all the way to 1912, 1913. Still Banana Wars. Wow. And then you have another set of Banana Wars because the U.S. invades Mexico in 1914. Then you have the Paiute War, and you have the more banana wars. Never mind, we're going on here. Oh, well, there's a Posey War.
All those bananas just, you know, here's what we need to do.
We needed those bananas.
Yeah. We need to arm every single monkey on this planet with a gun. We need to give all the monkeys guns.
There you go. And then, now we're into what we know. What we are familiar with, rather. Yeah. 1941, World War II. He doesn't mention World War I here. What happened to World War I? I don't know.
I don't know, but which one of those wars was the war to end all wars?
Oh, that was the World War II, wasn't it? Oh, no, that was the Great War. That was a great war.
Well, it was. I guess I can't disagree. I guess it was a great war for somebody. Somebody got rich. But nonetheless, if it was the war to end all wars, then we should be done by now, right?
Yes, but wait, there was a covert war in Guatemala in 1954. Did you know that we were involved in?
No, nobody told me.
No, and then, of course, 1955 starts the Vietnam War. Yeah, the Vietnam War, and then it continued to And then you have the conflict in Haiti. What was that about? That was in 1959, along with the Vietnam War. Then you have the Vietnam Cold War, Cuban Missile Crisis, the Marines fight communists in Thailand. What were we doing there? Fighting communists. Who are the communists? Were they going to attack this country? Were we all threatened by those people in Thailand, that little country there, Thailand? I don't know.
Well, I remember back when I was a kid, everybody was a suspected commie back then. You got to watch out; those commies are going to come and get you, you know. And you know, it's like what I was raised up to think that the Russians were going to attack us, you know. And we had to get underneath our for all the good it's going to do. Get underneath your desk and put your hands over your head and duck, you know, because they're going to throw a nuclear bomb at us, and we got to. Or they'd have us lean up against the wall, you know, tuck up against the wall and cover yourself and don't peek out or nothing. And that's how they trained us as kids to get ready for an atomic war, you know.
You got some ideas here. Like, you know, there was the Cold War in 1985, which was a CIA proxy war in Afghanistan and Nicaragua. Then you have 1986 Cold War CIA proxy war in Afghanistan and Nicaragua. Then you have the conflict in the Persian Gulf. Then you have the occupation of Panama by the United States in 1988. Second Gulf of Sidra incident, U.S. occupation in Panama, conflict in the Philippines. The first Gulf War then was in 1990. First Gulf War goes on, conflict in Iraq, 1992. Is anybody paying attention? Then you have 1999 in the Kosovo War. What? Kosovo War?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Wow. Then you have 2001, here we go. War on Terror in Afghanistan. Here comes the word. Then 2002, War on Terror in Afghanistan and Yemen. Then 2003, War on Terror in Afghanistan and Iraq. Then you have 2004, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, and Afghanistan. Okay, it goes on and on, war on terror, all the way up to where we are today.
Don't forget the war on drugs.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, that led into Mexico, and so, you know, we got like secret dudes down there, you know, fighting drug lords and stuff, you know? all those alphabet soup ones that you hear about every so often, the CIA and the FBI and whatever, you know.
Well, here's to put something in perspective. Okay, this is, he's got some updates here. Update number one, he says, it goes without saying that I am not arguing that all of America's wars listed above were wars of aggression and therefore unjustified, but arguably the vast majority of them were. And I don't know which ones he's talking about, but okay. Then he says, update number two, to put this into greater perspective, Iran has not invaded a country since 1795, which was 216 years ago. Yeah. I'm just saying, if you want some more information, this is a wonderful speaker. He's no longer here with us on the earth, Howard Zinn. He wrote A People's History of the United States. You know, if you really want to know this history, our history, you got to look at people like Howard Zinn, Z-I-A-N-N, A People's History of the United States. So this, see, your average American, and that includes myself, I didn't know about the banana wars.
I didn't either, man.
I didn't know about those monkey wars, and I didn't know, I mean, I knew about the Indian Wars, Sioux Indian Wars, you know, the skirmish between the cavalry and, well, they call it a skirmish, you know, Ghost Dance War. Yeah, that Ghost Dance War, that was not a war, Wounded Knee. That was a massacre, but they called it a war. You know why it wasn't a war? Because it was Chief Bigfoot trying to get to his people who were suffering and hungry and freezing to death. To a safe camp, you know, one of his own people, and they were surrounded by the First Cavalry, you know, who were really angry because of the war that took out, you know, old Yellow Hair there, you know, and they basically did him in, and they were really angry about that, and so the First Cavalry come upon Chief Bigfoot and his people there in out in the Badlands. And I have to say, they surrounded them, they had their Gatling guns and all that stuff. Now the Indians, this is in 1890, so by then the Indian people here on Turtle Island were pretty much decimated. They had really been brutalized, you know, genocided and so on. And so then they come upon this 300 and some people, old people, children, women, not a lot of young men, warriors, and Chief Bigfoot was dying of pneumonia. They surrounded them and they took all their whatever weapons they did have and so on, and something happened. There was a skirmish between one Indian and somebody was trying to grab his gun. This is the way the Indian people tell it. And if you really want to know the truth about that, what happened to the, and I call it the final assault upon the sacred hoop of life, because the Indian people here were the ones, the last bastion of holding the sacred hoop together. And then that Wounded Knee was the end of it, because that meant all the Indian people here on Turtle Island were now subjugated. And Chief Bigfoot, you know, was pretty much one of the last ones out there free on the land here, on their land here, and all the others were taken, already taken, and we called them, you know, people were already subjugated and all their weapons gone. Take all their weapons, and then you own the people. There's where we are today. Anyway, they massacred those people. They just started shooting because the one gun went off, and they let loose with all those Gatling guns. And all the people were running, trying to escape. And these soldiers, these United States of America soldiers riding on horseback, hunted down the people, women, children, old people, everybody, hunted them down like they were, you know, animals, shot them in the back and so on. So they massacred over 300 and some people. Uh-oh. But that, war was called a Ghost Dance War, Wounded Knee. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well,
these are the
thing that really bothers me the most about that, since I'm sitting here listening to the deal, is that behind every gun is an individual, right? And
that's correct.
And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking to myself, okay, what would possess an individual to shoot down people, you know, unarmed people, women, children alike, don't matter. What would possess somebody to be able to do that? I mean, the only explanation I can come up with is some source of pure evil in their hearts and minds to, you know, be able to look at somebody as if they were less than human and mow them down.
Well, that's the whole point of war, of those who create war have to create a particular scenario of why you put, you know, how to get people, how to get a human being to come into a mindset where you can look at another human being as a non-human, right, so that you can massacre them, so that you will kill a baby, you know, you will kill a woman, you will kill an old person standing there or running away from you with no weapons. I mean, they're just doing that in Israel now on the Gaza Strip. This one guy, I didn't look into it so much, but he didn't have any weapons. He's running away, and they shot him dead in the back. I mean, we have it in the streets here. Just recently, this guy's in his backyard of his grandma's backyard, this black guy, and he's got a cell phone. He was shot, I don't know, 12 or whatever, how many times they counted in his back. The man is... This is... Yeah, what is this? Where are we as humanity... What has happened to us?
I don't know.
You know?
But when their best justification is that I was only following orders...
There you go.
No, you weren't only following orders. You basically just went over to the dark side as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's always about... You have to look at this. It's the motivating factors behind the United States and other major countries. Because it's not just the United States... of wars and aggression. It's always been the same. It's the expansion of U.S. hedge money and others. So what are we looking at here? You know, we've been pushed into wars with a certain belief that we need to protect ourselves. Now, the Vietnamese were not coming over here to bomb us, you know.
No, And that's back to the whole Russia deal. When I was a kid, I feared Russia. I didn't know what Russia was all about. All I know is that every so often we'd have these drills in school where we had to get underneath our desk or hide up against the wall or whatever like that and cover our heads because we were going to be, you know, nuked by the Russians or maybe even China for that matter. And so... This is what I was raised to believe, and before I got old enough and wise enough to look into it for myself and realize, hey, the Russian people are just like me. They don't want to come over here and fight with us. They had propagandized the children in school for so many years that my entire generation, the word communist, the word communist is like... You know, if you actually look up the version of communism, I should Google it, but, you know, it's in the word itself. It tells you, you know, it's basically a community kind of deal, and you got a centralized government that makes sure that everybody follows the rules. Well, of course, it sounds good in theory, but it always usually ends up going awry because the wrong person gets in charge. And then the balance of justice goes awry from that point on. We've seen this many a times. And so that's a further justification. Hey, it didn't work for them, it ain't gonna work for us. Well, look how democracy has worked for us. We're not even a democracy here in the United States. We're a representative republic, according to the way it was written up. But nonetheless, even that had its flaws. But the whole doggone concept of when we were raised up, just like overseas... They're raised up and they keep telling everybody, well, you know, you gotta hate these people because they, it's like what I mentioned about the two little Palestinian girls. Alright?
Yep.
The two little Palestinian girls, the reporter said, do you ever want peace with Israel? And they said, no, we hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy. Well, you gotta flip that on the opposite side of the fence and ask them, the two little girls over there, the same question. And more than likely, you're going to get the same doggone answer. And this would happen if you put a Russian child and an American child in the same room and asked, you know, what can you guys get along? No, we hate America because they're tearing up the world, or vice versa. They're communists and they're coming to kill us. Or, you know.
Well, but then you have other people in that part of the world who are coming together. You have the Palestinians, and you have the Israelis, and you have other people throughout different countries where there are conflicts and wars who do come together and who do hold hands and say, we don't want war, you know? So, but you don't hear about those stories.
No, and I heard something really disturbing, and I got a really sense of, negative darkness in my heart, standing in a church talking to somebody who was a missionary over in Israel, that went over to Israel to do whatever, all right? Well, at that particular time, there was something going on the Knights of the Round Table where we had got a message from people in Palestine saying that they needed school books. Well, it turned out this particular individual was trying to scam everybody and wanted us to send money and not books. We were talking about actually figuring out a way to ship books over there. But back to the church, this lady who was a missionary who had connections in both Palestine and Israel, I went up and approached her and I asked her, I said, well, do you have any idea how we could actually ship books to Palestine? And because, you know, the two nations or whatever, they may not be getting along or anything, but there are good people everywhere, and, you know, the children need books and stuff like that. Well, if you could have saw the look on her face, like, you know, how dare you talk about Palestine like you want to send them anything, you know, or whatever. And that's the feeling that I got while talking to a supposed, you know, representative of my God, all right? And, and instead of saying, well, you know, there's certain regulations that you have to follow, but yeah, we could actually figure out a way to get books in there. They'll just have to be, every package will have to be checked out, make sure it ain't bombs or guns or anything like that. But we could get school books to them. It's just a real tedious process or something like that. No, it was just totally gaffed off to the side as if, no, Palestine doesn't deserve nothing because they're attacking Israel. Well, I think both sides of the fence are attacking each other, if you want to be truthful about it, all right?
And that's true.
So,
yeah.
But it's not the average Joe in those places, is what I'm trying to say. It's not the average Joe. It's the average Joe that's suffering on either side of the fence.
Well, I have to say the average Joe, but the average Joe goes along with it, and this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The average Joe does go along with it, and the average Joe does pick up a gun and does shoot a child or an old person or a person without a weapon. You know, this is what we're talking about, this kind of thinking, this that makes this okay, you know, but where it is, I mean, that comes from being inducted into this type of mindset, inducted into this raging war, let's fight, let's kill, let's destroy, let's, you know, because this and because of that. We're told because of this and because of that, and oftentimes it's lies and manipulations, you know, so we're talking about a whole generation, probably longer than a generation, that basically believes that war is the norm, you know?
Well, and it's sad, because that's what we're teaching our children. And I say
that's
we,
right.
I'm painting with a wide brush, we of the world, you know? Because if you're constantly glorifying army men via TV, or, you know, the gangster with the gun, or, you know, all the gold and stuff that the rappers with the rude music got on, or whatever, you glorify these people as if they're idols or something, and children are following right along with it. So if all they know throughout their entire life is that this supposed one side, we got to be out, watch out for Muslims, because if they're dressed like that, they're terrorists that want to kill us and chop off our heads and stuff. They have used,
well, that's all the mainstream media,
yeah,
and that's all the cabal, the elite, because they are the ones that need war. They do. They need war. But here's my theory. It's sort of like nothing has changed since the beginning of the kings, queens, and serfs. You know, the kings and queens today is the elite, the cabal, are on the hill in their castles. They're the ones with all the money and all the control. And the serfs are us. We're all down in the valley there. We're living on the land that doesn't belong to us. Basically, we have to pay for it, you know, to the kings and the queens, and we have to give them part of our food that we grow, because, you know, that's part of the deal. Then when they say, okay, it's time to go to war, line up, here's your guns, go out there and kill whomever you can, because they're in my way and I need their land anyway, or I need what they have beneath the land, or I just don't like the way they look. So you guys line up, you serfs all line up, because if you don't, you're going to lose your house, you're going to lose your potatoes and your carrots that I allow you to grow on that land, and you go to war, and people do, line up, send my son, who's, 18, 19, or whatever, whomever, my boy, I'm going to send my boy to war, I'm going to send my girl to war, well, daddy went to war, great-granddaddy went to war, well, we're a family of, military, we're the family, all our people went to war, yay, we're all warriors.
You know something else is that there's a term out there called the draft that a lot of people believe these days.
Oh, the draft. Yeah. You know what a draft is?
You didn't get a choice.
Well, yeah, that's true, but the draft is like, you're in your own little sanctuary there, and there's a crack in the wall, and a draft is coming through, and it's cold.
Yeah.
It's the, like winds of war coming through your foundation.
Yeah, but
the winds of war coming through your foundation. What is that foundation?
The thing is, if they would have gave every single soldier a choice whether or not they wanted to go to war, I wonder what the statistics of those who would actually step forward and take up arms against somebody else if they didn't believe it was justified.
There's not a big difference between 222 years and 239 years.
Nope.
I mean, and that's how long we have been at war. And people don't know this, I mean, we hear atrocities, we've heard stories specifically with the Vietnam War. I don't know the incident, but I don't know the town or the village. The village in Vietnam that the most violent episode took place, the most horrific, stunning, shocking thing took place. Right off the top of my head, I don't know what that is.
Well, I can't remember, but I do remember a lot of terrible tragedies that went on over there that, when the soldiers came back, they actually had Americans spitting on them because they were calling them baby killers and everything like that.
Well, that's why, because, see, this is what happened, this is what war does to a human being. Something happens to a person. Well, first of all, I guess you have to go to the training, right? The induction of young people from a home, a family life, your community, going down the street, you're having, go into the little soda shop and you have your Cokes and your whatever. You go to school, you go to high school, you play in the football team, the basketball team, the track team, or you're a cheerleader, or you're growing up in this little community. Everybody, whatever, knows everybody. Now you have these people, these children, now they're inducted into, drafted. And they have to train these people, these children. They have to train our children to become murderers.
Well, I know from experience what they do to the human spirit when you go in the military. And it's every branch of service. It doesn't matter. And it don't stop there. It extends into law enforcement as well. But when you go into the military, when you're drafted in or you volunteer or whatever, their job in boot camp is to quite literally break you down into nothing. They degrade you. They put you down all the way as low as you can possibly go to where they assert the ultimate authority over you. And then their job from that point on is to build you back up into a well-trained and a well-oiled machine, a killing machine, a soldier. All right? But in the process of doing that, they change your life drastically because you will never look at the world the same again from the time that you go in there with maybe your big dreams and they strip those dreams off of you, they shave your hair bald, and basically humiliate and degrade you until finally they start building you back up and they tell you how powerful you are and that you got to go over and get the bad guy and so on and so forth until finally you become a soldier. And then when you get in the soldier, you're already trained that you have to follow orders. All right. Even though your oath while you're going in says that you're not supposed to follow unlawful orders. All right. There's their loophole. But nonetheless, when it's all said and done, and then you actually have to go out there into the war zone and exercise these skills that you've learned, and you're well trained and desensitized against what the target is, which is another human being, and you take a human life. If you had any kind of morals to you before that, say you was a man of faith and had spent a lot of time spiritually believing in a higher power and that you shouldn't kill people or enough like that, that takes a big...
You were following the commandments, baby, right?
Yeah, but you...
Well, so here's the thing. This is interesting. See, people don't know... your son, or your daughter now, but your son goes, you know, your son's a good kid, right?
Yeah.
He's drafted and he goes through this boot camp. Why is it called boot camp?
Because they're going to put the boot upside your, you know what?
Well,
worse than necessary. Because you can go to jail. If you don't do what you're told in there, you can be court-martialed. And you can go to jail for not paying attention or not listening or not doing what you're told. You will be punished.
Well, that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you have this preparing the human machine for war. Okay. This is the title of this book. Okay. It's human psychology because this is what it takes, right? Sound psychological principles into the American culture. This was E.G. Boring brought the sound psychological principles into the American culture, right? It's a psychological book. It's one of the most popular titles ever printed in 1943. It was called Psychology for the Fighting Man. Yeah?
Yeah.
So you have, it's what you're talking about, how they strip a human being of, completely strip them down till there's nothing.
Yep.
They have no morals. They have no thoughts. They have no heart, spirit, connectedness to anything. Nothing. Instead of teaching abstract theories of each subfield of psychology, each chapter covered a topic related to warfare. It taught the basics of vision in chapters of sight as a weapon, seeing in the dark, color and camouflage, smell, a sentry, and hearing as a tool in warfare. So they, everything, every part of a human person or a human being, you know, it's like readers learned about social and clinical psychology in morale, food, sex as military problems, and mobs and panic. It included charts and diagrams from psychological texts supplemented by dozens of photos of soldiers, military equipment, and battle scenes. You know, so it's like the psychology for the fighting man. So it was hugely successful. It sold 400,000 copies and reached an estimated circulation of 1 million. You know, so this is the psychology of a human being. It's basically expanded to accelerate the process, try to get sound psychological principles into the American culture. Success in this endeavor will increase personal maturity, help social tolerance and progress, and enlarge the democratic communal base of thinking. Yeah?
You want to hear something personal about me? This is what I gained. And I'm going to say this live. This is what I gained from the life that I led all the way up to present day. What I gained from this entire deal was not only paranoia of authority, but the person in this world that I fear more than anyone else alive is myself. Because what I was taught throughout my entire life, as far as all the defense techniques and law enforcement and military, I learned every single possible way there was to hurt a person. I learned how to take somebody's mind and drop them completely to the doggone dirt. And I learned that if you don't build that person back up, you have a damaged soul, damaged individual.
That's right.
When they come back from war, they are hard-pressed to try to blend back into society. They usually end up on drugs or alcohol or in jail or dead. Suicide. And I learned about that system. I learned how powerful that system is. There's nobody in this world who I fear more than myself because of the knowledge that's in my head, the mechanics of how to break bones and take a life and do the things that pain compliance, such as police use, to twist somebody's arm behind their back and to keep their joints in a painful deal to make them to comply with you. They even show you how to take your thumb and put it up underneath somebody's jaw and cause them excruciating pain so that they'll do what you say. Now, I want you to think about that, folks. That's terrible. Nobody has the right to do that to anybody else. And I've even actually experienced what pepper spray feels like. I used to have really awesome eyesight before this particular incident, but the individual who's in my class just kind of like really seriously gave me a massive dose of this. It not only went in my eyes, it went up my nose, it went in my mouth, and I was, as a full-grown man, crying like a baby, sticking my head under a bucket of water because the pain was so excruciating that it felt like somebody was taking sandpaper to my eyeballs and they were on fire. I know what it feels like. I know that you feel like you can't even breathe. You feel like you're going to die. That's what it feels like to be pepper sprayed. And they do this to the officers because they want the officer to know that you can hang on to your gun and you can make it through this. It hurts like heck. It's terrible. And they also want you to know what it feels like if you do it to somebody else. And I experienced this. All right? And I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I don't care how bad somebody is. I wouldn't wish that kind of experience on anybody. It was terrifying.
Right.
Do you mind if I add to this a little bit?
Go ahead, Two Dog.
You know, this is the point. You also got to look at the French and Indian War here that happened on the Great Turtle when you actually had New York Mohawks actually firing on Canadian Mohawks. And, you know, that's cousins, man.
So we had that in the Revolutionary War, the Grays and the Blues, brothers against brothers.
Yes.
That's now, the same thing.
Let me explain where I'm going. My father, you know, fought in the Korean War. He is a Marine. And he got mad at me because I decided to actually march with Martin Luther King as far as peace is concerned, because, you know, if the president says go to war, we gotta go. I'm like, well, why ain't he going? Yeah. I mean, he called for war, but here's where I'm gonna go. Shaziz, the reason I'm saying this is that, I've never been in the military whatsoever. But you're talking to a man with combat PTSD.
Oh, I believe it, brother.
I've had a war in my own country since I can remember.
I believe it. You don't have to be a military person to suffer from post-traumatic stress, because the things that are done to the citizens under the guise of law, and even to the extent of one another because somebody wants your wallet or whatever.
Can I go a little further?
Yeah,
let me say it like this and I'll give it back. I have to have sometimes that I wake up in cold sweats, shaking like crazy because I still have nightmares of watching this guy shoot my cousin.
You have all wars on your homeland, foreign wars, does not matter, affect every part of the families. The children especially, you know, I mean, you have, it affects everyone. Everyone has this, if you want to call it PTSD, everyone has this nightmare infiltrating into their home and into their lives.
Yeah.
When a son, a daughter, whomever, whatever, your dad, uncle, who does not matter. So, you know, I want to continue with this pathological or psychological manipulation of us, because it's about all of us, okay? So this is an interesting thing. What do you think about this? This says theories of warfare. So how can we explain this pathological behavior? I mean, that's a good question. But the evolutionary psychologists suggest that it's natural for human groups to wage war because we're made up of selfish genes which demand to be replicated. So they're saying it's natural for us to try to get hold of resources which help us to survive and to fight over them with other groups, and other groups potentially endanger our survival, so we have to compete and fight with them.
Well, see, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I don't believe that that's what the human spirit is about. You know, I understand we got a survival of the fittest kind of thing going on, but the way that I hear society talking about how we supposedly evolved and how we're animals and all this kind of stuff, I just can't buy it. You see what I mean?
I kind of agree with you, and I'm going to go there in a minute, but so here's the rest of this. Now, this is, what do you think about this, people? Men are biologically primed to fight wars because of the large amount of testosterone they contain, since it is widely believed that testosterone is linked to aggression. Violence may also be linked to low levels of serotonin, since there is evidence that when the animals are injected with serotonin, they become less aggressive, you know. So I kind of agree with you. I do know that there is this survival instinct, okay? This is a natural thing, survival instinct. But where's the boundaries, you know? So what they've done is these warmongers, and that's what I'm going to call them, they have taken this psychological precept, and they've turned it into something very dark and evil, and it's a controlling factor, because when you are enlisted or drafted, you go through a series of psychological brainwashing.
Oh, yeah, and I'm telling you from experience that it is more intense than you can possibly imagine. I wasn't born with killing in my heart. I wasn't born with violence in my heart. If you'd known me as a child and watched my life as I grew up, I was a loving child. I didn't want to hurt nobody. I didn't want to be hurt by nobody. I avoided conflict, and maybe you could even say I was a coward. All right? Whatever you want to say about a kid like that, but I believed in peace. I believed in love.
Well, then you have these people who say, oh no, there was even in the old times there was wars and whatever. Now I'm more inclined to see what this person is saying. So what I just said, is a hotly debated issue, which is good. Debate is good. We have to debate these things. We have to talk about these things, because there are some scholars and scientists who claim that warfare has always existed in human societies. But now there are archaeologists and anthropologists who dispute this, and they have proof, because this evidence basically is the evidence points to that is firmly on their side. They dispute this because, for instance, they are finding out that a study of violence in 21 modern-day hunter-gatherer groups and found that over the last 200 years, lethal attacks by one group on another were extremely rare.
Yep.
There you go. And so now we also know about in our culture, we've talked about this before, right, to talk about the warriors. What was a warrior in an Indian nation, right? Right. It was a person, a man who was revered for his assistance, his helping, his compassion, the way he helped the old people and the children. And also, when it came to war, the most significant and important part was counting coup. We've talked about that,
yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Right? What is counting coup?
Well, counting coup is that if you have, like, you got a coup stick, okay, and you go up to the baddest, you try to find the baddest warrior they got, and you hit them with the, you touch them with the stick.
Yeah, you don't hit them. It's basically a touch. You touch the,
you
it's
touch
like,
him.
You have the first contact, right, with that coup stick.
Yeah.
And if you can do the first contact on the baddest warrior, let's say, or your enemy, you are a warrior. Mm-hmm. You are the one. It's not about killing. Get that straight. It's not about killing.
Not about killing at all.
Exactly.
It's bravery.
It's bravery.
Was very good at that.
And okay. that's what made the warrior. That's what made the people honor this man, this young warrior, who came back and received eagle feathers, because it was the highest honor to basically count coup on your enemy without killing that person, right?
Right. Crazy Horse was actually very good at that.
Exactly. You know, so this is what we're talking about. So I guess we'd say that there have been wars early times, but there's been Christian wars, religious wars, oil wars, you know, property, land wars, territory wars, you know, from that have basically been led by the, you know, the, what I'm going to say, the greedy corporate war machines. And we have, I guess I'd question what would happen? I suppose this is a, I've always said, if only the people would wake up and say, I'm not ever going to send my child to war again. Now, you have to have this across the board. Who would be out of a job?
Well, I think that it'd be a lot faster if the law was changed so that the politicians would have to lead the charge. You know, I think they would.
Well, their sons and daughters too, because you look at do the research. The majority of the elite, you know, the people up there, the political people and the elite and so on, their kids never went to war.
No. They got into lesser, you know, like into the National Guard, where, you know, National Guard's kind of changed a little bit since then.
Well, or they're the officers who, you know, they're the officers. They're put in those positions, you know. It's back to the kings and queens. Theirs only don't go out to war, or they are in positions where they're, you know, better protected. And it's the serfs, your general population, that go out and, you know, we're talking in, I don't know, I lost this link I was looking at. We're talking, just in one war alone, 50 million people. 50 million people. Okay, that's just one war. Dead.
Well, not to mention, if you want to talk about people saying, well, we don't have resources to take care of these needy people, discalculate up one modern-day bomb. That's it, just one. Just find it, pick any of your favorite one, Tomahawk cruise missile or whatever, don't matter. Pick one of them and go look at the price tag on one bomb, and then think about how many of those were dropped in just Iraq alone.
Think of what we could do with all that money, right, if we put it to good use.
Yeah.
If we put it to feeding the populations, bettering your communities, and cleaning up the oceans. And I mean, just think of it.
Yeah.
Think of it. Now, talking about the identity, we're talking war is strongly related to group identity. And this is a piece that is of course, they induct you into this. It's like, you know, your brothers in war, right? So, and this is real. Human beings do have a strong need for belonging and identity, you know, which can easily manifest itself in here some wrong things. Ethnicism, nationalism, or religious dogmatism. But what it does is it encourages us, okay, as human beings, to cling to the identity of our ethnic group, country, or religion, and to feel a sense of pride in being American, British, white, black, Christian, Muslim, Protestant, or Catholic. So
yeah, there's one other thing to add to that is basically pack mentality will actually get those in that group, because they want to be a part of that group, will actually do things that they otherwise would have considered to be immoral. They would not have chose to do certain deeds had they not been part of that group. You see what I'm saying?
I do, because that's what we call that, the wolf pack. Yeah. I call it the wolf pack syndrome. I've seen it in just small groups of people. I've seen, how people will... There might be somebody who might be a little different, right? Or they might have a different perspective on something. And then you have maybe one or two people who disagree. So, but they get together, those two people get together, and they start talking about that other person who is a little different. And it could just be a different perspective.
Yep.
on something so simple. But then you have the two that are talking together start to bringing in others on their side against that one person who has a different perspective. And before you know it, there's a whole, a cult going on that are against this one person who just has a different perspective.
Yeah.
And before you know it, there's about five or six or other people on the other side who are talking behind this person's back, who are instigating something hurtful or eliminating that person in some way, whether it's pushing them out of this community, which, by the way, was a spiritual community. I'm talking about something real. I'm talking about people who carry sacred chinumpa. I'm talking about people who pray in ceremony together, and you have one person who's a little off or a little out of, their, I guess, what they all believed in, but it's a different perspective. It wasn't anything harmful, trust me. It wasn't anything dark or evil. No. But what starts to happen is it becomes something dark. It becomes something evil, because now you have a group of people who are basically pointing fingers at this one individual, and these groups of people, some of them are carrying sacred implements like the Chinampa Wakan, and they're in ceremony, and this is a spiritual community, and I'm saying to them, what are you doing? This is not the Chinampa way,
If you want to see something really disturbing, I don't know if you've ever seen this video before, but go watch the movie Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, I watched that movie.
My God, if that doesn't explain at all what we're talking about, then nothing will. It's just mind-blowing. And if you actually go sit down through the Jericho, I think you and... doggone it. You and Patty went and watched the Jericho.
Jericho.
Binge watched is what you said. Tell me, when you watched that entire deal, did that not scare you in your heart to watch what was going on between those people and how those people were treating each other?
Well, it didn't scare me. What it did was it validated what I have suspected or known. It was an agenda, like we talk about the hidden agendas that we're all subjected to here and how we're manipulated to really battle against each other and takeovers of countries and, whatevers. And
the wrong word. I meant more like, in my heart, it disturbed me deeply to see people treating each other the way that they did.
Well, okay, so here we go back to the word survival. I guess the word survival of the fittest, that statement puts people in positions to put aside their morals, to put aside their compassion.
Yeah.
I think on some level we're all put in this position, and what does it take for you to stop that pattern? Some of those people in Jericho attempted to do that, right?
Yep.
And others were unable to. It takes one person who happens to find themselves in a leader position who is not able to pull back or draw back and say, oh, wait a second, let me rethink this. So it takes one person, but the people around that one person, some of them question, but then they can't get out of it. They're already, they're stuck in it, but
yeah.
There's a moment in our lives, a moment in time when we all meet the crossroads, we all come to the crossroads where we are put in a position where we must choose, right?
Yep. Either you
choose the light or you choose to do dark acts and you create harm. We are all, as human beings, put in this position, whether it's a collective situation, whether it's a worldwide situation, where it's an individual in just in your backyard type of situation, where you're going to speak up, to a population of people or a group of people like I did and say, this is not the way, this is not the Chinampa way, this is not the way of goodness and compassion and caring. Let's sit down together and let's work through our issues. Let's come to a better understanding. This is the way of, you know, of a human, in my estimation, how we need to be, rather than just become a wolf pack against a person who's innocent and just do that person in on all kinds of levels, you know.
Yeah.
And but so there's a what?
The scales of justice, you know, that I feel like is in every single person out there is so easily tipped to either direction that we're walking a fine line as humans of what we could actually accomplish. And it's a lot of power internally to always keep your scales of justice tipped. Maybe it's slightly less in your favor than everybody else, just so that, you know, that fairness can balance itself out. Because it don't take much to tip you on over to the dark side. You know, if somebody does something mean to your family, boy, I tell you what, like they say, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. You know.
Well, but if you are told constantly by your authorities or the leaders, and they do exist as we know, this is where you have to become, you have to take back your sovereignty.
Yeah.
So we are sort of like moved into this position in this day and time where the majority of people cannot think for themselves.
Yeah,
and
we got people out there actually tipping that balance for us by circumstances where they know that certain things are going to make us mad. We all got buttons that can be pushed to get us riled up or upset or whatever.
Absolutely.
And they know this.
And this is the psychological warfare that we are under constantly in our lives, whether we're actually holding a gun or not. It's a psychological warfare about controlling us, manipulating us against each other.
That's right. When I was a kid, I was told it wasn't manly to cry, and I've cried more times in my old age than I did all in my entire life. But I came to this understanding that had it not been for those tears being shed, that my balance would have tipped in the opposite direction, and the only other direction to go from that is to lash out at somebody because I'm angry at the world because the world can't use no common sense. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we need to recognize what we're up against, you know, and we need to basically use our gift of free will and also reconnect with each other. We're always talking about unity. We're always talking about, you know, it's not them and us. It's we are all one. You know, and you need that interconnectedness. You need that increased contact with people of different nations, for instance. You know, we need this. We have that now via the internet and other things. You know, but this is what we're up against is this the internet with mainstream media and the cabal and whomever is still involved in this and controlling what we see, what they show us, what they want us to see. You know,
yeah.
And this is why we have to be very careful. So we need more, I guess you'd say, connectedness, unity, understanding, you know, we need empathy, more, you know, we all need to come back to this. How are we going to live if our, basically the plan is for the rest of our lives and our children's and so on is to be at war with someone.
Well, and that's why I started this show off with a ludicrous thing saying we need to go to war, you know? I mean, because if our ultimate destiny in life is to just tear everything up and destroy it all, why go through all the suffering? Why don't we just get it over with, you know? As crazy as that sounds, you can't argue with it. I mean, either get it over with or let's figure out a way to resolve everything before it ever even comes down to that. Because every war could have been stopped before it ever even got started had the people voice their ideals and say, well, hold on, before we actually go over there to attack this nation, let's weigh out the balance there. Let's find out why it is that we feel it necessary to go into this foreign country and do these things. And if we can't justify it as we the people, then how can we allow a small amount of people in this world to speak on our behalf and send our families and our children to war? Does that make any sense to anybody besides me?
Yes. I want to read this out by Gregory Scott Busby. He put this into the roundtable chat here. He says, I feel you. I feel you deep within my heart, as though we were one and not apart, as though we were walking on the same path. I've cried your tears. I've laughed your laugh. I've screamed at your pain. I wept at your joy and swam in the river of love and deploy. I feel you forever past all and the end. I love you, my brother, my sister, my friend. With love comes levity. With levity comes laughter. With laughter comes healing. And there's your happy ever after.
Wow.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for that.
There's someone who gets it.
That's right. And this is always... To some... I don't know. I guess you have to listen to your own response after reading this. There may be some out there who may say, yeah, right, love, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of hooey.
They scoff at love.
Nothing's ever
going to
change.
You know? Huh? They scoff at love until they need it. Oh, nobody loves me. Well, I wonder why. But look back at your lifestyle and what you've done to others, you know? It's not that they don't love you. It's just that they can't find a way to share their love with you after all the atrocities that you committed in your life against other people.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, here's a piece that I always talk about is I think that people don't really understand love. I think they are all off track about what love is. Now, this what he's talking about here. This is love when you say, well, I've cried your tears.
Yeah, walking a mile in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah, I've wept at your joy. In other words, I feel you. I see you. I hear you. I am here for you. Okay, it's not about what can you do for me.
That's it, right there.
Yeah.
That's it. You couldn't have said it better, Barbara. That's it, right there. And we become a me society. It's all about me. It's all about me. And everybody out there in all the social media networks, they know it's all about you to you, because that's why they give you all these little gratifications, let you know somebody liked your comment or somebody responded kindly to you. And if you don't go there for a while, they send these little deals like they sit there and explain in that podcast. They give you the dopamine hit. Yeah, I'm special. I'm special. Well, in reality, folks, you are special. You're each individual, and it's all right to be so. But it's not all right to stand on the backs of others to make yourself seem to be more than what you were meant to be, which is your brother's keeper, a caretaker, you know, your friend, a family member. It's not rocket science. I know that.
Well, I think, you know, we just have to keep talking about this, because people will poo-poo, you know, that this could ever happen, but it's within each of us. You could poo-poo it all you want. You could say, you know, this is, you know, pipe dreaming.
Maybe.
You know, you could take that stance if you want. That means you're in the middle there of that crossroads, but you're leaning towards the dark.
Yeah, well, the alternative on that dark side is, and the reason why I said I fear myself more than any other person in this world is because I know what I'm capable of doing if I was pushed over the limit. I never want to go there. I never wanted to be there to begin with. I didn't want to have to hurt somebody to defend myself. Yeah, I didn't want to know these things. But now that they're part of me because of years of training and all this craziness that's going on, and now that I know that at any given time, governments of the world, or even just your average joker that wants to be, you know, hateful to my family or harmful or whatever, that at any given moment, I could just let loose and do something that I know for a fact I'm going to regret. I might spend the rest of my life in prison for defending my family because I went completely overboard. That fears me more than anything in this world, that I would take and do something so harmful to somebody that might, you know, very well cost them their life and eventually would cost me mine as well. But it's not just my life we're talking about here. It's my family. What do my family do while I'm in prison? What do they think about me? What is all the people who love me? How is their life affected from that point on when I either did something so terrible or I ended up in prison and the rest of my life they're looking at me through bars? I don't want to go there, and I don't want to take my family there.
Since I've had to defend myself since the first grade.
Yeah, I believe it, brother.
You know what I'm saying?
I believe it.
I was taught by my grandfather and my grandmother that we were all related, okay? And then I ended up having to go to school, and I'm sitting with all kinds of people. And let me explain myself. I was taught that we were all related, black, white, yellow, red, it doesn't matter, okay? And this one young boy came up to me because I sat with this other guy that was not like him, and we were talking, and he turned to, this is at lunchtime, and the little kid walked up to this kid, turned his plate over, and said, "You people don't deserve to eat." Okay? So what I done after he'd done that was I gave him half of what my plate had. So the young kid turned on me, and actually we got in it for a little bit. So I come back home, my grandmother looked at me because I had a black eye, right?
Yeah.
She said, "What happened?" Some kid did this. He said, "Well, what did you do?" I said, "The only thing I did was gave that other boy half of my plate." So I've seen it all, man.
Well, I believe it, and I can relate.
Now, here's what I'm saying. Jesus, you know what I'm trying to do, you know, right now.
Yep.
I have actually been told, because I'm doing what I'm trying to do, that I'm extremely dangerous.
Well, anytime you try to bring people together, that's insane. Yep.
If I'm dangerous for trying to bring peace to people.
You know, this question of love is very important because that's the key to everything. This is my personal perspective. And I know we've been taught a lot about love, L-O-V-E, four-letter word, right? L-O-V-E. We've been trained and taught wrongly, I believe, about what love is. You know, we all have, behind the love that we've been trained about is an agenda, you know, and there's a huge list of expectations that we've been trained to know about or think is true when it comes to love. That's why I use the word unconditional love, because with real love or the unconditional love aspect that we have a capability of but that we've been trained in the opposite, it has a power, okay? It's beyond our imagining, unconditional love. You have to do a lot of work on yourself. You can't love someone or anyone or love unconditionally without freeing yourself from these imprints and brainwashings about what love is. Love puts you in a position to expect something from another person, and that's a condition. And guess what? That other person has issues just like you, and they will not be able to fulfill the list that you have set up in your mind about what that person must do, what they must be, how they must act, how they must treat you, and so on. Now, we all deserve respect, for sure. But, you know, when you start having expectations of a person who has their own wound within themselves and an expectation of you, there's going to be clashes. There's going to be confrontation. There's going to be disappointment. Then after, when you get disappointed in someone, you get angry. Then when you get angry, well, there's the battle between the two people. And nobody's ever happy, and you don't get to where what you really dream of is real love, you know. Now, it's sort of like unconditional love is one of the most difficult things for us because we've been trained to have expectations of everybody, and everything. So there's where we are. It's a big challenge. I feel, you know, we say that we are in a spiritual battle, and I do believe that. I do believe we are in a spiritual battle, and what does that have to do with unconditional love? I think the two are intertwined. To me, I feel we were created with unconditional love by the Creator, God, Yahweh, you know, Gichimanitu, Wankantan, Gotokashila, it does not matter the word. Because I look at the beauty of a human being. I look at this extraordinary creation that we are. That had to have come from something so loving, so powerfully loving. All right? I look at the creation of the Mother Earth, you know, the awesome beauty of this earth and all creation. That had to have come from some amazing vision of beauty and love and joy. Okay, so that's how I look at it. So whomever did this, all right, had a mindset, in my estimation, of unconditional love and joy. So if we come into that frequency, if we stand in that frequency, like they say, be the love, you know, be that frequency, be that light. Right, we are light bearers, or we're not.
Where do you think this came from? Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous. It does not brag, and it is not proud. Love is not rude. It is not selfish, and does not get upset with others. Love does not count up wrongs that have been done. Love takes no pleasure in evil, but rejoices over the truth. Love patiently accepts all things. It always trusts, always hopes, and always endures. Love never ends.
Yeah. Well, and if you could put yourself in now, listen, we're not perfect.
No, we're
this
not.
I feel this is an opportunity given to us. We all have this opportunity, and I think to not work on it, to choose to not work on it, then that's your choice. And what are you going to experience? You know, I guess I'd say maybe it's time to aspire to achieve this, to be that unconditional loving person, that caring person, that person who, like, you know, like that poem said, you know, I feel your pain. I don't have any expectations from you. I just care for you because you're another human being and I feel your pain. I cry your tears. I laugh your laughter. I'm one with you. You are a brother. You are a sister. You know, and yep, you made mistakes, and I've made mistakes. And what do they say? People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, or there for the grace of God go I.
Yeah.
I could be that person, you know. So I think the unconditional love is a key piece, vibrationally and frequency-wise, because this is what this... let's say awakening time is about. If we are in a spiritual battle, it's a battle for our own spirit and for the spirit of everything, you know. So how are we going to get there to become one with the ultimate source that created us? And when the time comes, where are you moving on to? You know, when we, in our way, when we cross over, when we leave the physical body, so this is what is a belief here, we will meet the grandmothers and the grandfathers on the other side, and they will be waiting for us, and they will say, oh, granddaughter, grandson, We gave you a job to do down there on that earth. How did you do? So you're going to meet your maker, they say, or the ones who stand there before you meet your maker, or whether it's an angel, whether it's somebody else, a grandmother, grandfather, the holy ones, and they're going to say, yeah, how did you do down there on your journey on that earth? With that short period of time you were there, what did you do? Did you lend a hand to others? Did you embrace someone? Did you pick someone up? Did you do something really helpful and good and supportive and caring and loving? Or did you spend time down there with all these conditions, you know, expecting people to do this, and if they didn't, then you slammed them or, you know, deleted them or walked away from them or closed the door on them or shouted at them or spewed out hatred words, judged them? What is it that you did?
Well,
I'm just saying.
In my first part of my life, I did everything that was the opposite of what I should have been doing, and it took me a long, long, long time to learn what the meaning of life was. So the first part of my life, first three quarters or maybe 80 to 90% of my life, I messed up bad. I was rude, disrespectful, it was all about me, and you know, that was all that I could understand. But something changed in my life that basically made me understand or see what was really important. So I know for a fact that I'm not perfect. And I never have been. I never will be perfect. But when I stand before my Creator, I got a lot of explaining to do for the majority of every bit of my life, and even all the way down to even the present day, where still ain't to this day even remotely perfect. And I ain't got.
You know, you're saying that, but you know what? It's like, think of this: if somebody didn't believe in a creator or a greater one or whatever, I'd just say, okay, what seeds are you planting here on this earth? What legacy are you going to leave for those that lived with you, that knew you, that you contacted?
Well, hopefully good ones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't. So what I'm saying is, somebody might say, well, I don't believe in a creator, I don't believe in an angel, I don't believe in whatever is going to meet me over there. So then, basically, the question is, well, what are you leaving here as your legacy on this earth with your own people, your grandchildren, or those you met, or whatever? You know, and it's true, because we're talking frequency, we're talking energy, the power that we were given, and you know, yes, thoughts have a frequency and have an impact. Yes, words are powerful energies and frequencies and have an impact, either positive or negative. Okay, so this is the power that we were given. Our words, our thoughts, even our beliefs have a frequency and an energy, because that is what we are made up of. And what you are made up of is the frequency and energy and the behavior that leads you through life.
You know, you made me think about something. Even those folks out there that don't have any faith or believe in a higher power or anything like that, or maybe even had a really terrible life, and they justify all their actions because their life was so poorly. If you think that your life is so bad and it was miserable for you, you have to think about, how's it going to be for the people that you leave behind when you left all these seeds that you planted that aren't the ones that should have been planted? If you didn't like the way that your life turned out, and you decided to, I'm going to go out of my life because nobody ever cared about me, and I'm just going to leave it just as rotten as it was when I got here, and that's your legacy? Is that really the what you want people to remember you by, of how incredibly rotten of a person you was? Nobody shows up at your funeral, and those who do are probably vandalizing your last resting place. In probably some pretty creative ways, I might say, but, you know, nonetheless, even if you don't believe that there is any kind of life after, if there's any kind of, you know, balance or soul to you, if there is a free will inside you to choose whether or not you want to leave darkness behind or light, I would think that after a terrible life that you wouldn't want anybody else to go through what you had to go through. That's just my opinion.
Well, And Joan says the power of love is amazing, and she's absolutely right. And I think looking at the bigger picture here of why are we here? You know, a lot of people say, what's my purpose here? Why am I here? And, you know, I gave a talk at the local college years ago, you know, and I brought the ways of our people and shared about the way we lived life in what I call the tribal consciousness, meaning conscious awareness of each other as a group of people, right? And that we need each other. We all need each other. That's just a human nature. So, and I was talking to these young people. The room was filled with all these young people in college. And I was saying, you know, we weren't put down here on the earth to achieve what you've been told to achieve, like a big, you know, shiny red car or a big mansion on a hill or lots of money or, you know, and so on. I said, we're here really to create, you know, a healthy lifestyle, peace, unity, compassion, connectedness for our coming generations. And talking about the way of our people is everything they did, they realized that what they did today would affect the next coming generations. Now, that's on a big, you know, a larger scale, but think of yourself as an individual with your family. Everything you do in that family, what you teach, what you create, the seeds that you plant, is then imprinted and embedded into your child's life, and then they move forward in their life, and they carry that with them. So if you plant seeds of love and compassion, you know, that's what your child's going to have in their foundation. If you plant seeds of prejudice, of anger, of judgments, of hatred, of jealousy, that's what your child is going to have in their foundation.
Oh, yeah. And it goes with violence as well. You're abusive to your child, there's a real high likeliness that your child's going to be abusive to their child. And, you know, very few people in this world can actually break the chains that bound them when they were children. There are a lot of people who, you know, were abused as children and mistreated, and somehow or another, through the grace of God, I feel, or some miraculous miracle, were able to say, well, you know what, my life was terrible when I was a kid, I am not going to treat my child like this, and I'm going to do everything I can to not be like my father or not be like my mother. Now,
that's what I've done with my daughter, by the way.
There you go, brother.
That's right. Exactly. So here's a prophecy I'll throw out there to you. I talk about prophecy a lot. You know, prophecy is not written in cement, meaning prophecies, I feel, I truly believe this, is something like a warning, you know, like this is a possibility here, folks.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I always say about Revelations. I know what people say about the book, but I don't believe it's written in stone. I believe there were things set in place to give us options. We could go down this road, or we could go down that road. And Jesus talked about both roads.
Exactly, as did all the prophets. All the holy people that came.
Yeah.
You know, gave the teachings and the way. Okay? And then, you know, yes, often there are prophecies that are pretty stunning and shocking and scary, you know. But it doesn't mean that it's written in stone, because I believe the Creator gave us all free will. We can choose to follow this road or that road. There we go again. It's all in our hands. So you have this prophecy of the fifth world, 1,000 years of peace, you know, the mending of the sacred hoop. And we are in this timeline now of that prophecy. What are we going to choose? Again, it is in our hands. We can either mend the sacred hoop, which means coming together and following the ways of the old ones who lived in harmony and balance and helped each other and were in unity and recognized themselves as children of this earth, one big family, and how sacred this earth is, and that it is in our hands, and the original instructions were given to us, basically, of how to be stewards of this land, not only the land, but of each other, right? Or you can choose the other direction, you know? But prophecy tells us things are unfolding, and it is in our hands. You can choose one road or the other road, period. It's that way throughout our whole life.
Yeah.
And we are in that timeline now of leaving the fourth world. Well, we're supposed to be leaving the fourth world of chaos. And you know, that word chaos was a very significant word for me, because Spirit gave me this word and this message of a prophecy several years ago. This prophecy came as, and this is how it came, chaos will be rising. You will see insanity. You will experience people's behaviors that will shock you, that will stun you. Now, we are in this timeline. I have seen chaos rising. I have seen people's stunning behavior, shocking behavior. We have become more aware and privy to things that have been now disclosed about the horrible things, shocking things that have been happening. And it is stunning us.
Well, with that said, I got some advice to give people out there. Once you make your choice of which path you want to go down, stay the course. At all costs, stay the course. No matter what you hear about the other side or see from the other side, I mean, you wave them over. Hey, look how wonderful it is over here. Do whatever you can to reach out with your mind and your heart and soul, spirit, whatever, and try to show them that light. But no matter what, stay the course and be true to your faith. Be true to your belief. Be true to yourself. That's so incredibly important. Because... It's easy. It's easy to get distracted.
Well, I'm going to say that there are four words. This is a test.
Yeah, it's only a test.
It's only a test. Are you going to pass or are you going to fail? I feel humanity is at this point where either we're going to shift out of this fourth world of chaos where we are subjected to really dark, evil stuff and mind control, and the choices that we're making may not be of the goodness for all. And, you know, we see prejudices and violence rising up, and horrible things people are doing to each other. And it's in our hands. You can choose to do that. You're all given free will. So I feel this is that sort of like the test. Are we going to raise the frequency? Are we going to turn toward the light? If you want peace, and I think everyone listening probably does want peace, if you want peace, like the saying goes, peace begins with you.
Well, here's another piece of advice. There's a lot of individuals out there who want their so-called 15 minutes of fame by doing something terrible to people. And I say that when those folks take that path, don't give them the spotlight. Don't give them the, don't give them, deny them their 15 minutes of fame for doing something terrible. Does that make any sense to you, what I just said?
It does, because I think some people are starting to get that. I was watching this young man on a video the other day, and he was saying, he was talking about an incident, right, like one of those people that you're talking about that they want to be a star, you know, their 10 minutes of fame, right? There's a lot of that going on. And the things they choose to do are not good things. They're horrible things.
Terrible.
And they think that that's going to get them, well, because you see it. Mainstream media gloms onto these situations where people do something horrible and they're all over the news. Their faces are all over the news. They're talked about. They're put in this position where everybody knows their name. And this young man said, I'm not going to say the name of this person because I'm not going to give this person their 10 minutes of fame.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. You know, if you speak the name of the evil one, then he'll surely come. That's it. He'll be there. Hey, talking about me. How's it going? Yeah, I'm in the spotlight again. No, don't give them that. Don't even give them that opportunity. If people out there want to do rotten things to each other, sure, mention it on the news. Yeah, this particular individual did this rotten deal, and he's going to go to court and do whatever they choose over there. But in the meantime, we're not giving him the spotlight. We're not even going to show you his picture. You'll see it when you go to court if you're on a jury or whatever. But we're not going to allow these people that want to go out and terrorize. See, that's the whole key to terrorism. If you go out and do something rotten to people, and that will send fear across there that you're afraid they're going to do something rotten to you. And so that's how they get people manipulated in to living in fear and then following what, okay, I'll do what you say, just don't hurt me kind of thing. This has gone on entirely too long in our society. We have allowed the terrorist behind the bush to be that boogeyman from under the closet or under the bed or from another country or another color of skin or whatever. And so we, in this, in the process of them telling us that we gotta live in fear, we gotta be afraid of the Russians or the Chinese because they're gonna come and get us, or we gotta be afraid of each other, we have literally driven our cars past people who are out in the rain and the cold and need, because they could have potentially, not likely, but potentially been an axe murderer. They could have potentially been a robber. They could have potentially been on drugs or something bad about them. So we don't stop to help these people anymore. And there's terrible things even done under the guise of law.
Yeah.
I watched a disturbing video where these cops were so angry because of an individual who done something in a car chase, and this car literally flips end over end over end, and this guy is ejected out of the car, and you can see in the video he's not even moving. He probably isn't even alive, but these cops came up there and kicked and beat this man laying there on the ground when, you know, they could have very well just, you know, handcuffed him and subdued him and that was it, you know, but the chances of him surviving what just occurred was slim to none. But they were so angry and the pack mentality stuck in, and they went over there and they beat the living you know what out of this man while he laid there lifeless on the ground.
Now, yeah, we see a lot of that. Don't you think it's interesting that, I guess I'd say, mainstream media just spews out all this negative, scary, dark stuff? There's like not a station where you could go to, or whatever, a news station where you could go to, where there's not much good being spoken of. There's not much goodness, you know, that they're bringing to the public.
Yeah, if you take a full battery, an Energizer battery, brand new, right off the store shelf, that's what I feel like when I wake up in the morning. So I'll jump out there to see what's going on in the world, and by the time I watch some of the news reports on there, my battery's down 3/4. And by the time I get done and I see how bad that I was just told that the world is, my battery's below half point. And I'm drained. I am physically, emotionally, and mentally drained because I just said, I just started my day off by looking out into the world to see what's going on that I need to get out there and help fix. Now, I know the whole world isn't my burden to bear. I'm not supposed to carry the whole entire weight of the world on my back, but because my heart is so huge and I love people so much, I want to try to make a difference. And if only the words coming out of my mouth is the only tool that I have access with, I need people like Barber, Three Crow, and Two Dog, and Patty, and Steven, and other people that listen into this radio show. They're my rock. If it wasn't for you coming on the Knights of the Round Table, I'd probably be a ball and mess right about now. You know? It's true.
I get you. I know what you mean. That's why we need each other. And I'm not saying put your head in the sand and don't know what's going on, but I'm talking about the excessive, you know, the monumental, excessive push for the negative out there on the mainstream media, the fear, the terror, you know, and all this. Because there are good things that are happening. People are doing amazing and wonderful things, yeah. You know. But we don't hear about it so much. It does get you down, like you say. You know, your energy starts to drop. You start to feel hopeless. You start to feel helpless. You say, well, geez, this is just monumental. What can I do?
And I'm just one person. And you're just one person. Imagine if you and I wake up and after we have our cup of coffee, we're watching in to see what's going on in the world, and it affects us that profoundly. Think about the negativity of 9 billion people who are seeing the same message coming out from the mainstream media.
Well, talk about frequency there.
Yeah.
Well, talk about the level of that frequency.
That's power.
And, I'll say.
You know, it's the scales of justice being tipped in the wrong direction, because now everybody feels hopeless. Some people, even in their own circles, their family don't understand why they're depressed or don't recognize that they're depressed, and so they will not say the right thing when they need to say it or be there for them when they need to. You know, some people think that, you know, some people just want attention, so they won't pay attention to their pain. And in the process, you find later on, these people want to jump off a bridge, or they kill themselves some other creative way, or whatever. I've had two family members, all right, that committed suicide. And that is the most traumatic thing you'll ever have to contend with. One of my family members, quite literally, because he lost his girlfriend, set himself on fire. He poured gasoline all over himself and set himself on fire.
Wow.
And it was a terrible...
Now, there's a bit of love that was filled with expectations, wasn't it?
Yeah, too much. And had he known how important he was to the rest of the family, that there was just as much love coming from us as he could have potentially got from the other girl, but he was blinded by what he believed love should have been to begin with. That you know, you love me as much as I love you, whatever. It doesn't always play out like that, unfortunately. But he took it upon himself he was going to show her. He set himself on fire, and I don't even want to go into all the details of the other one. But I've lost family members that affected me so profoundly that it changed my way of thinking about things. So even if somebody, if not think somebody just wants attention, I will sit with them as long as it takes to get them to understand that their value is more than they think it is. And, you know, I got to the point where I was pallbearer at so many of my family. I've lost a lot of family over the years from old age and sickness and suicide and all the different tragedies that you hear about. But I got to the point where, you know, it's supposed to be an honor to be a pallbearer at a funeral where you carry your loved ones to the grave. But after doing that for so many years, I finally had to talk to my mom, and I told her, I said, Mom, you know, I'm at a state right now that I can't do this anymore. You need to speak for me to my family and tell them that I can't do it.
You know, it's a terrible thing when someone takes their own life, and it's a impact for generations, you know. And I kind of know what it's like to be on that edge of wanting to do away with yourself. I've been there myself in the past. And something always happened, you know, like the telephone rang or whatever. Somebody knocked on the door and said, hey, how you doing? But I'm just saying, I know the place where people come to, and you know, most of it is because, of course, people begin to feel hopeless.
Yep.
That there's no light at the end of their tunnel, you know, nothing, and of course then you feel helpless to do anything, and it's a tragedy, a terrible thing when people take their lives, and this is something that you don't care about when you're in that place, when you're on that edge, that fine line. You're not thinking of others, because you've reached that point, you know. And most of the time, you say, you'll find out, you know, what was going on in that person's life, you know. And there were signs, there were things that was present, but nobody kind of paid attention, right?
Well, I'm gonna tell one last story about one of my cousins, but I'm not going to go into all the graphic details of what actually happened. But my family and I were in the mall, and we were having a family day out. And my cousin walked up to me, and he said that him and his friends were going to go out and have some fun, and he wanted to know if I would join him. And, you know, because of I had already promised my wife and children that I was going to spend the day with them, I told him, I said, well, I really like to, but I want to take a rain check because I already gave my word to my family that we were going to have a family day. Well, that was the last thing that I ever said to him. I never saw him again.
Well, I think that a lot of people believe that they are insignificant. You know, I think that it takes that to put a person over that fine line of choosing to either live and get help, or...
Do you know how much I blame myself until I finally come to the realization that it wasn't my choice, but do you know how much I blame myself for not going with him or recognizing?
Right.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
Yeah, how would you know? You see, this is the point, but the person who's doing this does not know does not have, probably have not ever known of their significance, of how significant they were to the people around them who loved them. Everybody is significant. Every one of us on this earth is special, is significant, is unique, yep, is awesome. We all have hard times. I've been at that point, at that fine line, teetering on that fine line myself. You know, it took me years to know of my significance. You know, I grew up feeling insignificant, you know, due to certain circumstances in the household, in society, education, and everything I was involved in, you know, I mean, so that's, I think, is a big thing.
But now, you and Two Dog and myself, and I'm sure many others listening in, we don't leave our families without letting them know how much we love them and how important they are. That's what.
No matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what, I'm always saying. That's, go ahead, Two Dog.
Me and my wife and my daughter sitting in here. When we first get up, we say, good morning, I love you. And I think we say that almost 1,000 times a day. And, you know, she says, I'm with you because, let's put it this way. I live with, I got moved into a colony one time. It was a hippie colony, actually. They took me in. Okay? This is years ago. And, there were 200 of us. And, I had to be a pallbearer of 198. And me and one other guy left, and he's a deacon of the church, and I've become what I am, and we still talk, so there's at least two of us left, and it's the saddest thing in the world to even think that 198 of your friends you had to put in the ground. So, we played her name was Joy Darlene. I remember her. One of the sweetest people I ever met. And every time, you know, we played the Stairway to Heaven at her funeral. So every time I even hear that song, I get teared up.
I got some songs that it's amazing how we always attribute songs to certain individuals and their characters, but there's certain songs that were played at my family's funerals on so many occasions that, yeah, I could be driving down the road and that song would come on and tears would roll down my face because, you know, you learn to love somebody and then once they're not there anymore, you know, all those memories come flooding back. And I guess that's the reason why I even mention any of this stuff to anybody is because life is so precious, it's so important that you have got to understand that if people don't know that you care about them, if you don't take the time to let them know how important they are, we never know one minute to the next if one of us is not going to be here.
I mean, every second in that colony, let me say it like this, every second in that colony, every one of us, men and women, both, we always said we love each other. We worked with each other. We did everything to benefit the whole, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, the Lords of War might scoff at love, and they might scoff at the doggone poem that Buzz put in there, and they might scoff at us talking about peace and love and all that kind of stuff, because I say might, but we know doggone good and well they're going to, because they don't want. They don't want you to not care. They don't want you to care about each other, because if you care about each other, then the next thing that comes in line is unity, and you start taking care of one another. And you're not apt to fight their wars for them. They need you to fight their wars for them. They need you to make them money in order for them to keep at the top of the pyramid. But people got to understand, you're the base of that pyramid. you're the strength and the backbone and the labor and everything that makes things happen in this world. You hold them up on that pedestal. You allow that capstone at the top to do what it does to you. Because they'll either you're afraid that if you step out of line that you're going to be by your own people maybe, but by your government definitely you're going to be punished. And
how can I say this? On the outside of my grandfather, Metallica actually had a song called "Love Is a Four Letter Word and It Isn't Spoken Here." And on the outside in this world, I've seen a lot of that. You know, love is a four-letter word that isn't spoken anymore. In a lot of areas, and that's sad. That's sad in itself. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely sad because I guess that there's been events that I know has happened in your. Both you and Barbara's lives, and I know definitely in mine because I experienced it with myself. But once I felt that presence, we've said this, Barbara said it, you said it, there are no human words to explain that type of love.
No.
We do the best we can with the words that we got, and hopefully that will, you know, ignite that light, that fire in somebody else's heart. And once that heart kicks on, folks, you ain't shutting it off. As hard as you try, you might want to try to walk away from what we're doing right now. I've tried. And I can't stop trying to send peace and hope and love out into this world. I just can't do it.
It's like this. Just this. I've had a lot of people, you know, talk to me, all right? And the only thing I told them that if I can help you, whether it be, you know, it's spiritual or whatever, if I help you, I don't want anything in payment. I don't want that. I mean, just being able to help you is payment enough for me.
Yeah, and to go out and do that for somebody else, just keep the ball rolling kind of thing, you know, that pay it forward. There's a whole lot to that pay it forward thing. You know,
yes, it's not about money. It's not about money or what you can, you know, I do this, you do that for me. No, if I help you, then, you know, that's payment enough. And the way I look at it, if I can help you, don't thank me. Thank the Creator. I'm just a messenger, man.
Yep.
Well, supposing that... I don't know. It's supposing that, because you said something earlier, Shaziz, before we got on, about I don't think that the Creator put us down here to be killing each other.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly don't.
And I tend to agree with that. I think that there was abundance here on the Mother Earth. Everything we needed, Creator gave us here. We didn't have to fight over, water. We didn't have to fight over the best tomato. We didn't have to fight over whatever. So, everything we needed was given to us.
Yeah.
Every medicine, clean water, plenty of food, you know,
and
plenty of land.
As sounds, I still believe we still have that.
We do. I agree with you. I do agree with you. So I don't think that Creator put us here to be murdering each other and killing babies and assaulting each other and hating each other. And I don't think so. You know, I think we all got the original instructions. Every culture, black, red, yellow, and white. Now scientists or whomever these people are, I don't know, that do research, have been finding that There was a profound communication between cultures throughout the whole world, and they're finding that out through the structures that they have built and left us as a sign. You know, you have to say, well, yeah, they're discovering over there in somewhere over there in a foreign country or in the Middle East or here in the United States or Turtle Island, they're discovering monuments that are identical. I'm talking about identical measurements, structurally, amazing technology, and it's going back further and further and further, showing that there were highly evolved cultures throughout the whole world that had the same structures built. What do you think about that? Now, you're talking supposedly primitive, stone-wielding, grunting people who couldn't even communicate, building structures that today could not be built. So why were they building these structures? Why are they left on the earth for the coming generations? Okay, there's a message there. And for all these structures to be identical, it'd be like me setting up a house here, building it to a certain plan and vision that I was given, and there I set this house up, and then you across the world over there, you somehow set up your house identical to my house. How did that happen? You know? I'm just saying, we have to look at this. So that means that we were all connected. Somehow, we all were connected and were given this specific technology and information and guidelines. Are you there?
I'm with you. I think he had to step.
Oh, okay. So we have this, and yeah, Two Dog, we know that all early cultures, before technology, before organized religion that organized everybody with a certain mindset of how to get to Creator was put in place, and everybody's now following that rule, all people, black, red, yellow, and white, all spoke what I call the mother tongue, which is a relationship to the Mother Earth, all to Spirit, to Creator, Great Spirit, you know, that communication, right? Because it was a knowledge, wisdom, and awareness of ourselves on this Mother Earth as one big family in relationship and living in unity, right?
Yes. Yes, very much. I mean, we were, you know, black, white, yellow, red from around the world. We were all tribal at one time.
Exactly. Now, so what does that mean to you? Because, you know, I have my own understanding about that, because I call it that tribal consciousness, you know, and I sort of describe what I feel that is. And so for you, what does that mean?
Well, for me, that means that we're all people of the, you know, a lot of us, you know, culturally or anything of that matter, we've met that kind of, you know, because you have the pyramids of the Egyptians. But you also have pyramids here. We've seen them.
Exactly. Exactly. And the stunning thing is that all of these structures, and I'm talking about are in their identity, are the same, meaning the structure of these pyramids or stone formations or whatever you want to, whatever it is, these monuments, right, were altars. I call them altars because they had a frequency. How did they have a frequency? Because the certain stones that are placed in these structures have certain qualities that create a frequency when activated, right?
Yes.
Why would they have to be activated? How were they activated? How are things, you know, activated? Tone, frequency, and so on. There's that sound, right?
Okay.
So when you're singing, if you go, now some of these pyramids, for instance, have hidden rooms underneath them, and I was looking at this video where they found that if the people went in there and they chanted, for instance, or sang or spoke, there was a frequency of vibration that emanated throughout that whole structure. So why would that be important? Well, did they go in there and scream at each other? Did they go in there and scream profanities at each other? No. They went in there and they did ceremony. Okay,
yes.
So what happens when you do ceremony, right? What are you doing?
It's a God collection, if you think about it. It's a spiritual thing. Any ceremony is spiritual, you know?
So exactly. Well, what it is, you know, when we do ceremony, you know, we're in prayer, right?
Right.
I mean, we're we're making some offerings, sacred tobacco, or we're burning sage, or whatever it is that the old people were doing, you know, and maybe we're singing a sacred song, or someone is saying a prayer of gratitude, a prayer for harmony and for balance. So you're setting up a particular frequency. When you pray for peace, that carries a particular frequency. When you pray for health and well-being and harmony, that creates a particular frequency. There's only one frequency of love, right?
Yeah, now I know why Patty has me do it all the time.
That's right.
When you talk about frequency, I had mentioned once or twice that I like to watch these movies that, you know, people will go through, you know, these trials and tribulations, but the end result is you have hundreds, if not thousands or millions of people that come together. And even candlelight vigils, you know, when I see this, just the action, watching the action of all these people working together for a common goal or cause or something like that, and, you know, and doing it in a peaceful manner, that affects me profoundly. Now, I watched a deal, I don't know if any of you guys have been watching any of these things about a gun deal that went on in Almost, Texas, but because of the Second Amendment and the rights and the people having to actually fight for their rights against the system that has gone awry, when I saw all these people, it was probably like, I guess there was 540 counted that it showed up for this, you know, open carry march right there. It wasn't the fact that they were carrying guns that piqued my interest. It was the fact that when there was an injustice that went on, all these people actually did something that most people don't think about. They actually stood together. They went there in a peaceful manner, and they exercised their rights, and they did it, you know, basically like a family. But it actually brought me to tears because I know of all the sacrifices from all the military veterans and even law enforcement and even the average Joe throughout the history of this country, all the things that everyone had to endure in order to get us to this point to where we still have, you know, some sort of, you know, at least an illusion of freedom. But the fact that they stood up together, in whether it be a show of strength or a show of unity or whatever, and didn't have to raise a hand at anybody, just stood together, was enough that the police officers involved in this situation, they never came out to, you know, start any trouble with these people. The politicians or the city council, they never came out to, you know, address these people. They quite literally were probably in fear. We better not mess with these people. Just let them do what they're going to do with their march and let them go away and then business as usual. But there was dialogue between actual citizens of the town in question and some of the protesters that, you know, were talking about, you know, like the people were saying that they love their police department because they're like a small town community and they feel like their police department was just maybe even overreacting, but nonetheless doing what they could to protect their community. But the whole thing that needed to be done and still needs to be done in order to stop all this police violence and all this racism and all the craziness that we have to hear about on a daily basis is for people to do what these people did. Stand up and be open a line of communication with these people and tell your governments of this world these things that you expect and the things that you will not accept. And until we get to that point, if we're just going to be arguing amongst each other, bantering back and forth, and propagandizing each other, you know, I'm going to spew out the right, you're going to spew out the left, and we're going to keep on doing this, we're playing into the same game that these elitists have been playing on us all along, which is to pit us against each other. I don't like guns, so I don't want anybody to have any guns. Well, until we get to that day, when we can all peacefully get rid of all the weapons of the earth, then we have to be responsible to the extent if we don't want to end up being slaves or lambs at the slaughter, so to speak. We need to have strength, whereas I believe our true strength is our unity coming together. But at this point in the game, we're not ready to give up these guns. History has showed that a weak society has been the society that the strong overcome every single time. And the peaceful society is the first one that seems to get attacked. You preach peace in this world and you got somebody out there want to scoff at you. A man writes a poem about love and somebody wants to scoff about it. Oh, well, that's a bunch of, you know, hippie stuff or whatever. But the reality of this deal is here, everyone on this earth needs love at some point in their life. Nobody has a perfect life, and everybody needs somebody else in their life.
Well, look at the 60s peace and love movement against that ongoing Vietnam War that we shouldn't have been there in the first place. You know, those young people were attacked actually shot and murdered on the campus there,
yeah,
by our own military, those young people. What a horrible, horrible thing. Have you forgotten it? I haven't forgotten it.
I haven't forgotten any tragedy that's ever played out in history that I've been told about, because my heart bleeds for those people. You know, it could have been my brother, could have been my sister, could have been your brother or sister, could have been anybody. You know, it could have been you. But the thing is, doggone it, I don't know what it's going to take in order to get this world to realize that there are individuals in this world who do not have your better interest at heart. If you go watch the video with Nicolas Cage in there, I think it's called The Art of War or something like that, Lords of War, something like that. You have to Google it up, Nicolas Cage. But nonetheless, he was selling guns to both sides. Both sides of any conflict. He didn't care where there was a war going on. He was making money. He was selling bullets and ammunition. And if you paid attention to the moral of that doggone story, then you'd understand why it is that your governments don't care whether you fight in the streets. They don't care whether you go to war or don't. Because it all makes some money. When you're out there protesting and burning down your own communities, you think money ain't exchanging hands? People have insurance, they're going to get paid, but the thing that people miss is even though that person's going to get paid for the business that you just burned down in your own community, they're going to take that money that they got paid and they're going to leave your community. They're going to leave you jobless. They're not going to come back here.
You have a fact about people in high places selling weaponry to both sides.
Yeah.
That's not just a story. It's not just a movie.
It's the truth. That's how they get power.
Well, so I guess what we're saying is we talked about history. We talked about the history of war. We've been in war for over 200 and some years. We've been in countries where we shouldn't be. It's not just our country. It's Great Britain, and it's all, you know, other countries. They're killing their own people there in other countries, too, over historically. We've done that. It's been done here. We started out talking about, this madness. Let's all murder each other. Let's all stomp on each other. Let's all be cruel and whatever.
If we scrutinize our own country, which we do, we scrutinize our own country. We're not letting our country slide for atrocities, but that is a first step to recognizing there's a problem and then working towards a resolution.
Well, you have to do your research.
Yep.
You see, you have to do... I mean, as a person here in this on Turtle Island here, the United States of America... You know, I was brought into the system, a little person who didn't have any idea, only my inner standing of things, my wisdom and knowledge and sacredness that I came here with, as you all did. And then I started being subjected to the societal rules and regulations, which you all were. And then I started to be imprinted with certain ideas and information about the world around me and what was expected of me, like you all were. And I was told certain things about our history when I entered into school and so on and so forth. And but my gut feeling on a lot of this was something's wrong here with this picture, but I didn't know what it was fully. But my instincts said something to me, perhaps just like you all experienced. And then it took many, many years. You know, I grew up feeling like I live in America. We're the good ones. We're the good people. Everybody else is bad. They're all the dark, evil people doing horrible things to their own people, and that's part of our history. That's what we're told, right? And America, great. America the great, and America the beautiful, and America with the golden paved streets, and we're, you know, the Statue of Liberty, and bring me your poor, and your all that stuff. And I was told all this stuff, and I believed it, you know. I came to believe it. Instinctively, something felt wrong, but the programming is so severe, it's so impacting, that over a time, you know, if you say, well, I don't believe that, well, you're the cuckoo, you're the weird one, you're the crazy one, so what do you do to survive in that nightmare? You have to comply. So on some level, we have all complied to the lie. We have all put aside our instinct, our true nature, the wisdom that was within us, fundamental nature. We've all put that aside because we wouldn't fit in. And when you're a child and you're vulnerable or a young person, you want to fit in. You don't want to be had fingers pointing at you, and you don't want to be, you know, outside that box, because that box, the majority of people have already gotten into. So you're the weird one, you're the outsider, you're the strange one, you're the kook. So on some level, you deny yourself. You comply and you deny the wisdom within you and the ability to think for yourself. So you become, right, you know, you kind of like line up with all the others because that's what everybody's doing. So you kind of do the same thing. Some point, sometime in my life, I started to figure things differently. I think some things popped up. I think the first thing that hit me, that spun me around to the lies about our government, was when I found the book Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. If you want to know a truth of what happened, I mean, there are many books now, there's many, like I told you earlier, Howard Zinn was one, but Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee just floored me. It just stunned me. It literally brought me to my knees, and I was doing a lot of crying, you know. I always felt, even earlier in history, when I was told about the Indians and the cavalry and the Indians, I always sided with the Indians, and I always felt, you know, then I didn't know that I was part Native. I didn't know that part of my family was kept secret, and but my inner feeling, my inner sense was I sided with those Indian people who were actually in the movies, cowboys and Indians and cavalry and Indians were mostly Italians dressed up like Indians. They weren't even Indians. Yeah. Anyway, you know, it's real. This is what people, so they were put in a position where they were the evil ones, they were the dirty ones, they were not human. But something inside me said, I don't feel right about this. There's something wrong about this. So when I read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, I was in my mid-30s, okay? Early 30s. And that just validated my own natural instincts that said something's wrong with this picture. We're being lied to. So that floored me, that book. And that's when I started shifting my perspective about the United States of America and what happened, what really happened here, you know?
Yeah.
We don't, nobody knows. You're not taught the real, you know, the conquerors write the history, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And that's the hidden history that, you know, there's a lot of hidden history all the way out through the entirety of, you know, history of all the societies, all the nations out there. You know, like those pyramids you guys talked about. There might have been something really important about those that we needed to know, but somehow or another we advanced enough to destroy ourselves or for whatever, or maybe even the same case as the biblical flood or the other stories of the flood. Actually, you know, it says there were giants in the land in the day. There might be giants again one day. Who knows? Whatever the truth is, it hasn't been shared on an equal footing with both sides of the story, and it's been biased all along. And so all the time when I'm growing up, I felt just like you did. I felt like I'm not being told the truth. Something just don't feel right here. I never looked on the Indian cultures as savages, part of which because my grandmother was full-blooded Cherokee. All right, and so I knew that I had a little bit of Indian blood in me. My cousins were always talking about how we had Indian blood in us, and you know, we did play cowboys and Indians because we used to sit around and watch like the Long Ranger and, you know, cowboy and Indian shows and all that kind of stuff. But that was part of culture that basically demonized part of my heritage. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, now, me too.
I was indoctrinated into, this is all right. You know, like I talk about, I get upset when I see little children playing Army Man. It's not because, you know, I don't want children to be children, but I understand the full implications of what it means to be in a military. I understand the seriousness of the situation if you ever do have to go to war. And even those folks who haven't been to war, but no history of war, or have actually been in a, quite literally, a civil war. That's another war we probably should have mentioned, because I don't think the Civil War ever stopped. I think it's
still going. No, it didn't.
War.
Right.
But everyone is affected by it.
Well, you know, I have to leave because I have,
Well, that's that time anyway, lady. So if you got words of wisdom now, you can just throw them out now and... You made it to the end of the show.
Well, I don't know about wisdom, but I just offer people my perspective on things. I don't expect anybody, not forcing anybody. I always say, you know, take what sings to your heart spirit. In other words, that's a sensory perception that you may have about what we're speaking about. Because if something comes across as a truth, it has a different frequency, right? And that's what we're talking about. And that's what I think is a very significant, important thing for us to learn, because that's a gift we came here with. That's part of our original gift that I call it the truth meter. You know, what does it feel like when somebody's speaking truth to you? Then I call it, well, you know, take what sings to your heart spirit, because your heart spirit is the one who knows the truth or also knows the lies. So I don't say to people, trust me, believe me, I know everything. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just sharing my perspectives, my own personal experiences, and various other things that I want to share. It's all fodder for thought. It's all fodder. Do research. Do your own research. This is important. And we have that capability and ability to change things, beginning with ourselves first. And I have somewhere inside of me, and I've always had this sense of hope. It sort of like comes over me when things get really dark. You know, when something's happening, I've had this ever since I was a child, something overtakes me, and it's a sensation. It's a frequency of a higher frequency, I suppose. Maybe you could say it's an unconditional love frequency. Or one time I was with my sister and family and driving to my grandpa's place, and we were in a storm, and it was very dark, and really the winds were heavy, thunder and lightning, and my dad was driving, and I'm in the back seat and huddled all down, and it's kind of scary, and I felt the tension in the car. I felt the energy of, you know, anxieties and fears, and we're riding along, and suddenly my father slams on the brakes, and he yells out, don't touch the handles on the car, stay still. You know, there were wires that fell down, electric wires, and they were sparking, and trees were down in front of us, and my dad was shouting, don't touch anything, you know. It was a very scary moment. The energy in the car was horrific, you know, scary. It was dark, lightning, thunder, and my father slams on the brakes and starts yelling, don't touch anything. And I was in the back seat. I must have been about 7 or 8, you know. And my sister would be 12. She was 4 years older than me. And I suddenly this extraordinary feeling came over me. It was like I was filled with this sense of love and joy, you know. I was like amazing. It was like somebody put a blanket over me or some kind of a something came over me completely, filled me, and I felt this peace and settled down. And I leaned over and said to my sister, I just have this feeling, this wonderful feeling. I don't even know what I said to her. I was trying to explain it to her, couldn't. And she leaned over to me and she says, oh, that was just an angel that kissed you, right?
You know, we gotta really seriously do a show about this, because as I'm listening to you, I'm hearing the same, pretty much I had the same experience as a child, just like that in a car. But I busted out laughing. I couldn't hold it in.
Well, and what I'm saying is that there is something out there far beyond our imagination or our, I guess you could say, the reality of what is really happening, what is really available, what really is, that we're not so privy to. But it does come, and I've always had that happen to me. When there's been the worst things happening, something will come over me that uplifts me. And I know that ultimately, when that happens, you know, the message is, everything will be all right. It's okay. You're safe. Yeah. And so I always want to say that to people. I want to just say that, you know, as human population, as human, a human being, a human person, grandfather, my teacher, used to say, as an earth person, we're all earth people, meaning we're just one earth family, you know? This is our home. And every one of us is significant. And don't ever think that you are less than or not significant or not important, because no matter whether you realize it or not, every one of us is in relationship to each other. And you touch someone and you may not even know it. Your energy, we'll call it frequency, whatever it is, but it is about that compassion for oneself, unconditional love for oneself, forgiveness for oneself. I guess I say, you know, peace starts with us. Love starts with us. Everything on the higher frequencies, we have capability of creating and manifesting. And there's another side here that is working to take that away from us, or to trash that, or to smash it, or to, you know, interfere with the abilities that we do have. We were all given extraordinary abilities to make a difference. And
yep.
So that's all I want to say, and I just thank everybody for listening in. It's wonderful to see people here on the chat and know that we're reaching people, and I hope that something that I share today touches your heart spirit. Mm-hmm. So, Doksha, Ki Wan Chinky Antinkilo, I will see you again, and I think, you know, I'm not sure if we're having our show tomorrow. I think Patty's away. I'm just giving you that a bit of information, but I'll let everybody know about that. And I want to thank you, Shaziz and Two Dog, again for a beautiful show. Pilamaya, Doksha.
Well, I'm going to be joining Barry Prince on his show later on, 4 p.m. today. So we'll post links in the chat room and share those around if anybody wants to tune in to hear what Barry and I and whoever else joins us comes up with. But once again, Barbara, it's always a pleasure and an honor to have you here. I'm going to play a song when we leave up out here after I give Two Dog his last chance to say something. I've been playing this a lot because we always talk about planting seeds. That song, The Rose, is just... it does something to me. I think it's got a really good message, and I want to play that. But I'm going to be joining Barry Prince on his show at 4 p.m. today. So if anybody wants to hear that, we'll post links for you everywhere we can. Let everybody know. So Two Dog, another brilliant show. You got any words of wisdom you want to share with people?
One thing I could do for, you know, for Stephen, he asked in the chat as well, so I'm going to do this, but I can say it like this, ladies and gentlemen. It's a thing called close your eyes wide open. We're in a time of focus that is incredible. Someone's down, pick them up. This ain't about race. It ain't about color. It's about the human being. So, it's about peace, love, honor, and respect. So, no more war. Let's stop, try to stop this. But I'm going to do this for Stephen real quick because he asked in the chat. And I was going to do this anyway. If you don't mind, I'm going to give a prayer up. Get you money too. God, Jesus, all the names that people call you around the world, hear me. I thank you for everything you have done this day. The sun that is shining, the grasses that are on the mother. We thank you for the standing ones, the fish people, the four-leggeds, the wingeds. We thank you for everything. We are here to do what you wish us to do in our own hearts. Grandfather, you have opened my eyes. You have made me see. Grandfather, I say to you in humbleness that I will do what I can. And I wish to go to the great council in the sky and tell my ancestors that I did the best I could. Grandfather, we thank you for everything that flies, walks, and crawls, and we thank you for Shaviz, and we thank you for all the people that are still here after everything we have been through. Grandfather, with many blessings, I give it to the world today.
Amen, brother. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. This is what we do here. We try to share a good message. I want you to go check out The Big Puzzle with Barry Prince, peoplesinternetradio.com, and go over to say hi to the people at People for People Radio. There's one of our other affiliated networks, and TCT Radio. And if there's any other networks out there that like what we're doing, you can always podcast and rebroadcast anything that you find on here. Any of this content is all for, it's all for everybody. It's, that's what we do. We share information, we share love and peace and hope and our faiths, and we share it all. And we do it in the most respectful manner as possible. And so with that said, we started off this show talking about, you know, let's go to war. Let us go to war. Let's all go to war. Well, folks, unfortunately, it seems as though we never left war when we started it, you know, way back in the day. You know, and it's time for us to come home from this war. It's time for us to exit the battlefield and go out there and start rebuilding the world in a positive manner as opposed to what we've seen in the past. You know, they say... go ahead.
Can I say just one more thing to people?
Go ahead, brother.
If you do not believe that there's a creator in this world, when you go to town and you're walking on the sidewalk of all this concrete, and you look down and you see a flower that is growing in the middle of the concrete, do not think there's not one.
That's a brilliant example. It's amazing. It's amazing, and I'm glad you noticed that, and I'm glad you brought it up. But folks, it's time for us to roll up out of here because, you know, other people got to say what they got to say on their networks, and we're actually taking up their time at the moment. And I apologize for that because we love everybody and we're not trying to take anybody's time. But you got to help each other. You got to work with one another, and you got to at least at one time experience what love's all about. And that's what we try to share here, and that's why this network is here. Join us on ShazizRadio.com for the Knights of the Round Table and on for the Mad Science Show, where we try to, you know, do everything we can to at least throw some positive pebbles and plant some seeds of peace, hope, and love in this world and make the world a better place one positive pebble at a time. I'm going to play this song by Bette Miller, The Rose. You know, I know you guys have heard it, but if you sit down and actually listen to the lyrics, it's kind of like what we've been talking about. As hard as life may seem outside, and that flower that Two Dog just mentioned, it's grown in the cracks of the sidewalk. There's a creator, and he loves you. He or she or whatever the case may be, the person or entity that put you here loves you. And that's That's what I feel coming from my heart. So, with that said, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned and share the message. Take care.
Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. Some say love,
I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet!
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet! I order you to be quiet!
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Have to push the pram a lot.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shaziz the Terrible. All those who are king, Shaziz the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.